And welcome to the 33rd episode of Ladies with Gumption, and we are all in the same place, surprisingly, from Mexico!
Woo-hoo!
So, as always, we recap BCTV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with...
May.
And I'm Tatiana.
And you can reach us, as always, on the Twitter, at BCTVGumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Tumblr. Mine is Falling in Love in a Flash. You can talk to Tati at Valerie M. Perez, or you can talk to May at Her Own Hero Writer. You can find us on iTunes, on the Podomatic site, ladieswgumption.podomatic.com, and leave us comments there or on iTunes. And we're also on Google Play and the lonely Facebook.
Which people avoid like the plague.
No love! No love.
I feel like we got like a like recently, so thank you.
We did.
For that one like.
But Facebook keeps trying to boost it, so I'm concerned. It's okay. Facebook is not all that.
Exactly.
In recent news, we have to give us a small moment of silence for Bella, because Danielle lost her puppy of 12 years.
Yeah.
So, to cancer, so... Sad to hear about that. In show news, we found out that Titans may have cast their Donna Troy. And it hasn't been confirmed by the studio, but the actress Connor Leslie did follow Jeff Johns on Twitter and shot a scene in Toronto with Britton Thwaites, who plays Dick Grayson. And usually, if, you know, an actress follows Jeff Johns, it's probably because
she got a role from
she
him.
She got a role. So, in the scene, she said to have interacted with Dick in a friendly way, and she was heard saying the line, "Oh, I've missed you, Boy Wonder." So,
interesting.
Yes. In other news, in flashy news, Todd Helbing survives a threat of cancellation by the fandom by confirming that Ralph's death and the previews for what's to come in the remaining episodes of the season. So he's confirmed that Ralph is indeed dead,
and his story is over.
He barely survived cancellation by fandom because people are very tired of Ralph, mm-hmm. but he has. You know,
he's not scraping by.
Yes, he's people's husbands again.
Yeah. Even though
Tati rescinded her separation.
Yes, I was not a trial separation. It's off now. However, people are still a little upset because Ralph keeps popping up in episode descriptions. So we'll see. We'll see how things turn out.
One line, guys. Have the hope.
And not DCTV news, but in fandom news, the Universal FanCon fiasco. We're going to talk about that a little bit. I'm sure it was all over Twitter, so you probably heard about it. It was a con that was started as kind of a crowdsourced Kickstarter for an inclusive fan convention co-funded by Jamie Broadnax of BGN and Robert Butler. I don't know what... Is he like the Black Geeks or something?
I'm not sure.
Yes.
And it was boasted as like a safe space for marginalized people, and it was supposed to be happening this weekend, actually, but it was unexpectedly postponed 1 week before the event due to financial difficulties. There's all kinds of red flags about mismanagement. Yeah, one big one was that the event organizer associated with the event, Tai Nam Pham, has a history of, like, scamming cons, so, you know.
Yeah.
That was not great. And many fans were notified of the cancellation, not through the con, but through hotel blocks associated with the con. So they didn't even find out from the co-founders themselves until... hours afterwards.
And then it was condescending because they released a statement. They're like, well, even if it's canceled, you can still come watch Avengers Infinity
War.
And
they're like, we lost money too.
We lost money too. So it's not just y'all. Well, fuck y'all. Like, I don't care about your money. I care about my money.
Right.
And then, or you have like founders and board members who start like dropping out like flies. And for example, like Jamie went from self-proclaimed co-founder to unpaid volunteer, which I don't really know how that happens, who had no idea of what financial decisions were being made. So really, instead of like an apology, it sounds like she's incompetent, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not know where money is going if you're on like a board of directors?
You know, they have, people have snapshots of tweets or something like that where it says that she met with people over where they're going to host it and how much money it's going to cost and all this other stuff. So, not a good look.
Yeah. And I'm going to keep my petty in check because I don't really have any love lost for Black Girl Nerds or the site or Jamie as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, we usually don't give press on this podcast. but, like, if you remember on, like, the Women of Color fandom episode, I alluded to, like, influencers who claim to represent me or claim to represent, like, black women, but did nothing to protect black women characters or represent my views at all. That's who I was talking about. So, yeah, it's just not a good look, and it just makes the whole idea and community of fandom, it just looks bad. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you thought that this would be the one space where you would feel safe, and you get swindled by...
Yeah.
people that look like you were, or claim that they're representing you. So it's just not a good look.
Right. And then to hear that they knew about it even beforehand, you know,
right.
that she knew more than she was letting on that whole time. And it even goes further back with people saying that she would, like, take credit for mm-hmm. their work. And even on the site itself, you'd see people say guest blogger, and you had to, like, dig to find who the actual blogger was.
Yeah.
It was like they're taking ownership of other people's work in order to sort of, like,
boost themselves.
Yeah. And to, like, get into that community, you have to, like, give so much to her.
And it's like, weird. Like, how do you take a marginalized space and make it, exclusive or mm-hmm. be bougie in a space that's supposed to be inclusive? Like, it doesn't really make sense. And I, like, remember all the times that she was talking, back in season one in the Flash fandom, when she was talking all this crap about Iris, and mm-hmm. even when people tried to engage in, like, a civil discourse with her, she would just kind of, like, block or mm-hmm. claim the victim. And it's like, if I wanted to hear, like, she was co-signing all the racist and misogynistic stuff that regular, like, fanboys stuff. Like, if I wanted to hear that stuff, I would go listen to them. I don't want to listen to someone that's claiming to be representing me, because mm-hmm. no the fuck you're not. You know? So it would always, like, frustrate me to have her put out this claim and boast that, and get, like, the attention for it. It's kind of like the first man on the moon kind of thing. Like, she had the first... thing, and so people thought that if they spoke out against this popular thing, then that would be it, because there's only one, and, you know, they're so afraid of losing this one space that they wouldn't speak out against
right.
it. So,
and from what a lot of her writers who had written for Black Girl Nerds in the past, there was one essay I read specifically. She wasn't a writer for Black Girl Nerds, but she remembers how Jamie also mistreated Abby from Sleepy Hollow.
Yes,
the same thing.
I remember that as well.
Same thing
on the Flash.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah,
and it's one thing to call out the writing, because I actually spoke to a writer, or an ex-writer from Black Girl Nerds yesterday, who told me that it's just like, there's just like two people left, and the new quote-unquote manager, even though Jamie's still calling the shots, she just named someone else. But she was like, oh, well, I mean, it was more about the writing than about Iris, but the way that she would blacklist people, right? Like, and she even wrote that article calling out Iris fans.
And she would go to, like, the con to try and get
candidates exactly.
to, like, talk
and
about
like,
her
so
own.
So that's where it's the real, like, problem.
Yeah.
Like, already, obviously, I'm not interested in you if you're going to be talking shit about Iris the way that racists would anyway. But then to go a step further and try to claim that her fans are a hive mind or, like, a militant.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, try and, like, trick Candace into
yes.
admonishing her fans. Like, fuck
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So, like, and that's the kind of stuff that she would do on the regular in other spaces as well, and try to sort of control the narrative to make her view the only acceptable
right.
one.
Right. And there are probably, like, plenty of talented writers who have worked for BGN whose articles that I legit have never read because I refuse to give, like, to Jamie. She doesn't get my coins, she doesn't get my clicks, she doesn't get none of that. So for the people that have gotten out and are finding other work, then best of luck
yeah.
to them. Maybe I'll actually get to read something that they wrote.
Just because she was at the DC and DC event, and I saw
nothing.
Her up close. She said nothing on the panel. It was like the Black Heroes panel or something like that.
Yes.
And she had nothing to say. When she was asked a question, she just basically promoted
herself.
Mm-hmm. And then I feel like I was really mad because she had the audacity to take a picture with Candace after she was just like... asking her questions that had nothing to do with the show, and was, you know, you're right, trying to make her admit that her fans were bullies, which is not a good look. Like, you can criticize the writing, but do it in a way where you're not bullying people in spaces where they're already being bullied by other people.
Exactly.
So,
anywho, moving on to our episode this week, Black Lightning. Season finale was last week, so we're bumping Krypton up to complete side A with Supergirl. So it's all Krypton all the time. House of L.
Got a promotion.
With side A. Yeah, side A is House of L. And then Flash and Arrow on side B. We'll talk about our likes and dislikes and predictions for upcoming episodes. And we'll nominate finalists for each side, and then Crown of Winter in the second half.
I hope it's easier this week.
Fingers crossed. Because we gotta go to Infinity War.
This week, Tati is our host. She's gonna take us through side A first, Supergirl and Krypton, Metamorphosis / Doomsday. Take it away. Supergirl and Krypton, side A, Metamorphosis / Doomsday. Tatiana, take it away.
I am taking it away. Supergirl. In Search of Lost Time was all about characters looking back and facing hard truths about themselves and the people they love, and sometimes locking those people up and taking away their powers. Truly heartwarming. First, Lena has Sam trapped in a creepy L-Corps basement while she runs tests to determine just what the heck is going on with Rain. Something we'd all like to know, thank you very much. Once Sam wakes up, she's informed that her DNA is transforming into Rain's during her blackouts. She says thanks, but no thanks to that diagnosis. So Lena pulls out the tough love card real quick, showing her evidence of the people Rain murdered, and even saying that she's a monster who could never be Ruby's mother. All to make Sam transform and catch it on camera. Once Sam sees the ugly proof, she agrees to stay until a cure is found and wants Ruby kept away from her. Sadsies. James, meanwhile, comes by with lunch and lends a sympathetic ear. He even gives Lena carte blanche to keep secrets from him because he's already keeping secrets from her. I love romance. On the other side of town, John and Mirren are dealing with the latter's Martian version of dementia. Mirren's been performing some mental exercises meant to stimulate his brain, and even though that practice wound up sending a Kalinorian into a psychic rage, John still thinks it's a good idea to take his dad to the DEO for a field trip and more mental gymnastics without telling anyone. Of course, this leads to some anger issues throughout the headquarters, such as Kara punching Mon-El during cape training, and Wynn getting into a shouting match with his random coworker Deimos over who is the better tech leader. John confesses the truth and puts a protective psychic block around everyone, but when he confronts Mirren about what's going on, the older Martian reacts so badly that a bunch of villains are let loose, a bunch of DEO agents start attacking each other, and a bunch of Supergirl fans are gifted with the caramel scene they've been waiting for. In a second training session, Kara begins tearing into Mon-El for all his shitty, disrespectful behavior and how she bent over backwards trying to help him and then apologized for trying to help him. And now he's back and apparently amazing, wanting to reminisce over his bachelor days while she's still heartbroken and he's suddenly married. Relatable. Her yelling ends when Alex brings a psychic dampener so that she can focus on putting prisoners back in their cages. Unfortunately, one person who needs to be metaphorically caged up is Mirren, as John is forced to put a power dampener on his dad so he won't hurt anyone else. Everybody apologizes to everybody else, including Mon-El, apologizing for the entirety of season 2, and now it's hero time again. And not a moment too soon, because the next thing you know, literal birds are dropping from the sky because Pestilence is here to have some fun next week. And that's what you missed on Supergirl! Woo! Alright, ladies.
That's a very tight recap.
Thank you. What did you like about In Search of Lost Time?
Well, I actually thought there was a lot to like about this episode. And I think in general, Supergirl has come back a lot stronger post-AJK and the hiatus. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, little moments in the episode, like Kara, like, unbuttoning her shirt instead of ripping it open like she usually does, which is, like, cute and hilarious. Like, I like this shirt. Like, that's, yeah, you know, if you like a shirt, you're not going to, like, rip off all the buttons. So I thought that was really cute. I know. I like how Lena and Sam and John and Mirren's storylines seem to kind of parallel each other this week. Both John and Lena are dealing with trying to help someone that they love and care about, but that person is not really willing to admit or believe that they have a problem. So I felt for John and Mirren particularly because I understood from John's perspective how hard it would be to have to be the one to essentially imprison his father's powers. Because this man has been through, like, he's been, like, a prisoner for, like, what, 300 years or whatever? Mm-hmm. And his mind was the only thing that he had. So, like, how hard would it have been for John to have to contemplate being responsible for taking that away from him? Especially when Mirren thought he controlled. I understood Mirren and his frustrations at his decaying memory. And I like how Alex used her own experience with her grandmother to help John through it. And I thought it was, like, a really... I'm claiming this again for, you know, 7 things you can see for Supergirl. We're talking about, like, real-world issues and how to make them, mm-hmm. like, real... actually in the episode, and I think they did that really well with the dementia storyline for Mirren. And then on Lena's side, I like that James pretended to care this week more than he did last week by bringing her lunch and giving her some advice and then trusting her when she tells him that there's some things that she has to keep secret. It's, you know, especially since he is keeping Kara's identity, so like he can't really play, you know,
right.
You have to tell me everything because he's not himself. And his advice worked for both Lena and John because they both had to like raise a mirror, so to speak, to their respective loved ones for Sam and Aaron to respectively realize how they had, like, unintentionally hurt some people and how, because they wouldn't accept the help. So I thought that was really a nice way to tie both storylines in together. And then finally, speak on the Carmel, because Miriam's psychic attack may have been, like, the vehicle for the truth serum, but the truth needed to be spoken, and I'm glad that Kara got to tell Monel about himself. Really glad. Even more, I'm glad that Monel took his beating and validated her feelings, even though they hurt him, because he's getting teary-eyed, and she hasn't been planning to tell him at all. So, like, this is the Monel that I think we should have gotten in season two, even if he still started out as a jackass. Like, this is the growth that we should have seen in season two for me to believe that, you know, he's turning into something. Like, I didn't want him to, like, go out for 7 years and come back like a new person, essentially. Right. And I, like, again, you can tell that the writers know that they fucked up because they're apologizing through Monel. And just, like, a vanity point, Chris's facial hair looked on point this episode.
I like this suit much better on him than the old one.
Yeah, me too. It felt like their story was centered around Kara, which is how it always should have been, instead of being centered through Monel. This episode was centered through Kara's point of view.
Yes.
And he's there to support Kara's story. So I don't really want them to get back together still, but I like that the writers are trying to, like, unassassinate his character to give them a better breakup down the line when...
I'm hoping it's still going to be a better breakup.
When he has to go back to the future.
Return, Monel, return. Go back. Return to sender.
Go back. Thank you. And now leave.
May.
Oh.
Are
you
done? I am
done.
I said finally.
Yes. You usually have three
finally. And I'm like, no, wait, I remembered one more thing. Because I say finally sometimes, so, you know, it means nothing. I also think Supergirl benefited from going on a break and it coming back much, much stronger than before. Like, for the last two episodes, there's been a lot of good character focus, and I live for this kind of shit. And, like, last week was filler, essentially. Mm-hmm. But it was good filler, for the most part. So that's right up my alley. And after quite some time, we finally got some Mirren and Jean focus. And it was beautifully played. The performances by Carl Lumbly and David Harewood were touching and heartbreaking. And, like, you could really feel the sadness, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel it already.
I know, right?
Or again. I feel it again.
And, like, such strong performances from both. And the focus on Mirren... the focus on Mirren is a nice reminder that these characters are tied together, and I adored the fact that both Alex and Kara got to have a moment with Jean while he was struggling with what was happening with Dad. And it was really, it was just, made my heart ache in a lot of ways. Because, like you said, paralleling real world stuff, and, you know, at least I know someone who had dementia, so it's, like, really depressing to watch, like, play out on screen. The plot progressed in this episode too, which was great. Last week we complained that James had 1 foot out the door, so it was nice to see that he seems to be all the way in with Lena now for, you know, whatever reason. And maybe
for whatever reason. Okay,
so here's my thing. Maybe it took her kind of neglecting him for him to see that he did care for her and wanted to give their relationship a chance.
Power play.
Yes.
I like it.
Leave him on red, ladies.
Don't answer his calls for 2 days.
Yeah, do it like I told you to.
And I like that Lena was at least trying.
All right.
I like that Lena was at least trying to help Sam to the best of her ability. And that Sam was adamant about her not doing such awful things while she was Rain. It kind of really cut deep. And you could see, like, she was in a lot of pain over that. I think Odette and Annabelle did a great job emoting this episode and really made us feel Sam's pain. Poor Tati. She knew something was wrong with her, but she also didn't want to believe it was this bad, and it was really sad to watch. And I also think Lena helping Sam really showed what kind of friend Lena is. Like, she's going out of her way to help a friend to ensure that she can get back to her life, and that was really nice. And I really liked the mind stuff and everyone being able to be mad and vent their frustrations, even though it was heightened. Everyone put in the work, you know, like, you could believe Wynn was really mad at that guy who we only ever really kind of see. Like, who is this guy? What's your beef? And that's my favorite part. Kara dragging Monel to hell and back was pretty epic. It was like the writers, like you were saying, Jess, were reading our mind and then just bam, laid it out.
We didn't have to read our mind. We, like, left them know.
They write our tweets. Yes.
I love that Kara, after what feels like forever, got to express herself regarding Monel. And I love that her anger started out as, like, agitation before going into full-blown telling-off mode. Mm-hmm. And Mona has changed, yes, but it's been off screen, and I love that Kara addressed the fact that she, like the entirety of the Caramel fandom, to be honest, romanticized her relationship with Monel. And I like that he's matured enough to not try and defend himself because he realizes he was an asshole. Yes. So that's growth. And it was such a great and therapeutic moment. And if they were to get back together down the road, at least it will be in a way that is on Kara's terms, mm-hmm. which is how it should have always been. And that's that.
That is that.
That is that.
And that is true words. In general, I did love that we got to see these characters having fun on their time off, and mostly having that fun together. And even the fight with the Calamarian at the beginning, like, Kara was, like, enjoying herself in her battle with her, and, like, taking the pictures and the photos, and it was really cute. Like, I like that sort of, like, light, airy atmosphere that we haven't had in a little bit, even when it's juxtaposed with heavier things, like John and Mary's storyline. I also love Gwyn's, I have done something amazing. I have done something okay. Because I feel like we haven't gotten enough of fun and adorable Gwyn this year. And so now he's back, and that's great. Even though he didn't really matter for the rest of the episode. That's okay.
He got to be angry.
He did. He got to be angry. He got to be angry at Arando. On the heavier side, like I was just saying, the less fun side, John and Mirren was the most powerful storyline of the night for me. Just because you see their love for each other shine through, like, the pain that they're both enduring and they're both having to go through it together, because Mirren is the one that's losing his memories and losing, you know, control of himself, but it's also John who has to watch his father become helpless and then be helpless himself to be able to do anything for him. So, and to have to wind up putting him in the same position he was before, right? Like, he feels responsible and he feels guilty for sort of words.
White martianing his dad.
Thank you. But yeah, it was understandable. Like, even though, like, at first I was like, John, why aren't you fucking telling anybody? But, like, it makes sense that he wouldn't want to face the problem that his dad is clearly causing because he doesn't want to hurt him further. I am glad that Kara was present for John's scene with Alex about his father, even though it really was Alex who again stepped up and gave the necessary support and connected things to her grandmother, to the point that I feel like maybe Kara just, like, this was before Kara came, I guess.
Yeah,
that's what I'm assuming. Kara clearly does not know his grandmother, but I did like Kara's line of the son becomes the father the son, and I like that came back around. It was kind of the through line of the episode, or at least for that storyline. The psychic breakdown scene was heartbreaking. The acting was amazing from both Carl and David, like you said. And it reminded me of the Mars episode, because that's sort of how John found Mirren.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so that was kind of like a, I don't know, heartbreaking echo, if you will. Meanwhile, James redeemed himself this episode. He gave Lena that advice that she needed. He looked out for her. He respected her boundaries. So, you know, that was great. If it hadn't been for the last couple episodes, I would have been like, yay!
That's so cute!
But now I'm like, good job. So, whatever. Meanwhile, Lena...
Last week I was predicting they were going to break up.
Yeah, right? We were like, alright, they're done. But now they're back. They're back on track. Lena helped the shit out of Sam, like you said, and I was terrified of how she was doing it. I was like, alright, it's too much. Too much help. Please stop. But it was clear, you know, once it was clear that she was trying to prove to her that she was Rain, then I was like, alright, I see what you're doing. I like it. But if it hadn't worked, I would have been pissed at Lena. So I'm glad it worked. So I could be like, good job. Also, Odette did some acting. That was lots of acting that she did. And it was really painful. Like, painful to watch. She did good. It was painful to see Sam break down. I love Lena promising to help her. It wasn't painful in the other way. Like some people say.
It wasn't
like that. It was like, oh, Sam, I'm sad. Anyway, I love Lena saying knowledge is power. That's like, that's 100% her motto, right? And that's what, she's just a total Ravenclaw, and I love her. All right. Kara ripping into Monel, like I said, it's everything that fans have wanted to say to him, or wanted her to say to him, and it was a totally perfect meta moment on their relationship, and sort of like the relationship between the writers and the fans. And of course the best part was that afterwards, even though she felt bad, she still stood by what she said, right? She was like, mm-hmm. I feel better having said that, even though I wish it hadn't been while I was punching him in the face and feeling his rage. And of course that he acknowledged she was right, you know, that he was an asshole and that she had every right to be upset. The Birdie song was amazing. I love that song. So good job playing that in the last like 5 minutes. Martian Dad Hunter is a great nickname. And Wynn should come up with more nicknames. And like Jess pointed out, Kara unbuttoning her shirt moment was really cute. Like, it's just like that little stuff, those like little beats that make the episode better, just make it feel come to life more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also such like a, I mean, obviously Kara's a woman, so that's her defining, separate from the other superheroes, she's the only lead woman superhero on her own show that's titled after her. So like seeing her do that shirt thing is like, oh, it's such like a woman moment, because we all have those days, right? Like, I like this shirt.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so you think more often, like, superheroes don't have an endless supply of clothes, right? Right. Sometimes they shouldn't rip them off.
Or they don't have a, like, sewing machine where they can sew back all the buttons and they popped off.
Yeah. So what did we not like about the episode?
Yeah. So, as much as I like the Lena-Sam story, I thought Sam was being a little bit dramatic at times. Like, also, like, did she forget that she talked to her mother who confirmed that she was an alien?
I guess so. Because
she was like, I am not an alien. I was like, girl, you stuck your hand in, like, boiling pot of water. I think you knew something was not right.
Yeah, she saw the ship, too, didn't she?
Right, she got shot, Sam. You survived. Yeah. Like, she had, like, super strength in some episodes. Like, I guess that just all went out the window. And then her level of incredulity at Lena suggesting that she was Rain and hitting Lena with, like, the evil Luther comparison, I thought was just, like, hitting below the belt. And, like, Lena's supposed to be your friend, and, you know, she gives you some bad news, and that's where you go, that's, like, where your mind goes. It's just kind of, like, it rubbed me the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't like that. Brainy and Imra were conveniently off-screen again this episode. I like how, like, Manuel just threw out that, oh, they went to this random place, and, like, what, Antarctica or somewhere, and that's why they're not here, you know? Just, you know, why even bring them here to this past in the first place if you're not really going to utilize them? Like, why couldn't Brainy be the one to describe the simulation that he built to Kara,
mm-hmm,
instead of Mon-El having to do that? And then suddenly, like, Mon-El's like fine with him. Like, he was all like, my wife and my best friend abandoned me last week, and now he's like, oh, they're cool, you know. So I thought that was a little weird. And then I also can't help but feel a little bit salty over the fact that Kara had to struggle so much to use the cape while Mon-El was like Mr. Capetastic extraordinaire. And even without the psychic attack, I can understand while training under Mon-El, why training under Mon-El would get on Kara's nerves, because, you know, it would get on my nerves. Like, even without the psychic attack, it was like leading up to her to punching him anyway, I feel like.
I can understand that, but what I like, you mentioned with the whole Lena Sam thing, is what I dislike. If they're trying to make Lena sort of a villain story later on, I don't like how they're building it, because it's like people always throw that out at her that she's a Luther, and it's like, so what? Mm-hmm. She's done nothing but like help you guys, so I don't understand why you're being so bitchy.
it's gonna be like that old adage. How the fuck do you say that word? That old adage that when you say something enough, people start believing, mm-hmm, it, right?
Yeah. So I don't want that to happen to her. So cut it out, Supergirl. And yes, while they were mentioned as being on a mission, I also dislike the fact that Mon-El has talked about Imra and Brainy's secret only to Kara, and he hasn't yet had a conversation about it with his wife. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, oh, this is the secret, but it all happened off screen, so it doesn't have any weight. And it's weird to me that even though I don't really care that much about Imra, because she hasn't really developed in any kind of way that I would be invested in, mm-hmm, they're still in a relationship, so I think it just needs to be addressed. And I agree that while I liked Lena wanting to help Sam is great, it was a bit overdone. Sam, you know, she didn't want to know what was wrong with her, even though she did want to know what was wrong with her. So all of a sudden she's changing her mind, and I don't understand. So, like, what Lena was telling her wasn't at all that far-fetched, given the fact that she was herself searching for answers, and, you know, she went to her mom, and she saw her ship, and all of that stuff, so I don't get it. Also, it should have made more sense to her as a character, like, oh, this is what's wrong with me. Of course, like, no-brainer,
right?
You know? I also don't understand why Lena didn't tell Supergirl about this. like, they've interacted several times, so I don't know why it wouldn't be something she'd contact her about. Like, she and Rain battled it out, and Lena knows this, and she respects Supergirl, so why all the secrecy unless they want Lena to have a secret to counteract the fact that Kara and James have been keeping secrets from her, too.
But at the very least, have Lena say, I can't tell Supergirl because she'll just lock her up or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Not mention at all. Just like last week, no one noticed Lena was gone. I also dislike that Mon-El had to teach her the cape thing. Wasn't like a dislike, more of just the... It was just annoying to me because he
has... It's based off of her cape.
Yes, it's based off of her cape. And he's come in this season and he's like... All of a sudden, he knows all these things. He's a knowledgeable Mon-El. I'm like, I don't buy this, though. Like,
yeah.
I feel like after either one try, Kara could have gotten it, or she could have just learned it herself, because in the time that he's been a hero and the time she's been a hero, technically, probably around the same amount of time, even though they've been in different time zones or time eras. But, yeah, I don't know. It made no sense to me, so... But you'll mention this, but I was wondering why the Legion Ring, or why the psychic anomalies didn't affect Mon-El. And I guess that he had the Legion Ring thing.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, I didn't realize it the first time. The first time I was like, what the fuck? He just doesn't have a brain, so there's a brain effect? But then I realized afterward that...
So that answered my why wasn't he affected?
I actually did pay attention to Supergirl, so I caught the Legion Ring first time.
What are you saying? All right. Shady Jess.
I'm saying that I don't pay attention to Arrow a lot, clearly. So this is one thing that I did pay attention to, and I did catch the first time. So I'm going to, like, give myself some credit here so that when it takes, when it gets taken away, when we get to Arrow, then I'll break even.
There you go. yes. So... I couldn't tell either if Sam was lying about not being an alien, if she was in denial, or if they're retroactively saying the conversation she had with her mother and all the discoveries she made became Rain. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because I get that when Rain takes over, she doesn't have her memory anymore, but she seemed to be all one person in the early episodes. She wasn't blacking out until she met the weird hologram thing that made her black out. So I feel like that's just showing that the show doesn't know. And the show doesn't care to patch over the plot holes. And we're all sweeping the messy Rain plotting under the rug because Sam is awesome. But yeah, I think that there's some early poor writing from earlier episodes that is still affecting this storyline. And I totally agree with Jessica that Sam stepped over the line with the Luther comment. I get that it's scary that your friend is locking you up and saying you can't see your daughter, but you knew something was wrong, and that's why you came to her in the first place. And as much as I loved the rage-induced truth serum for Kara, I did not like that he wasn't affected because of the Legion Ring acting as a shield. I would have rather it have been something that was just affecting her, because I feel like everyone else's rage was totally useless. Like, the Wynn thing was funny, but, like, who is this Stamos guy? And, like, does Wynn really think that guy is an asshole or, like, really bad at his job? Like, it's kind of shitty. They were saying some really shitty things to each other, and that's never, ever going to be addressed, because nobody cares about this other character. So it would have just been better if somehow it was only affecting Kara. Because then I was just like, Mon-El is only not affected so that he can listen and accept.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. It would have been... Well, maybe he was also affected, and then he could have said some ragey things that then were not, you know, that were actually true things, but that were whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. I'm going on too long about this. Point is, I thought it was dumb that they were not affecting him. Okay. Just so that he wouldn't be, just so they wouldn't dig his hole more. I know that's why. Yeah. I know they would just make it worse.
Because then she would said that she would just punch him in the face, and then we'd all been happier too. So I don't know.
There you go. Anyway. Yeah, like I was saying, the Wynn and Demos, or however you say his name, fight, just points out how meaningless character storylines are when they're not specifically the focus. Because, again, like, Wynn has no other issues that he could have brought up. There's no other thing he could be mad about. And Alex, the only anger she had was to punch them and, you know, to get them to stop fighting. Because, again, there's nothing that she could be angry about right now. Because they don't have anything going on. So, that's sad.
Actually, it would have been interesting if Alex had called Maggie.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yelled Maggie. There you go.
Or, like, when... I mean, he yelled at his mom last week, I guess.
Yeah, I could hear him yell. Like, called mom. Like, I'm still mad, bitch. Like, hey. See you for ice cream on Sunday. Anyway. And then, finally, the tag was a little sloppy to me. Like, it was just like, oh, let's go fight some crime. Oh, birds are dying. See you next week. And I was like, all right. Okay. Festivals is coming. I got it. I'm going to just say that for the promo. Like, yeah, that's true. It doesn't. Anyway, that's all. So, what do we predict is going to happen next week or in the future of Supergirl?
Maybe James and Lena won't break up.
I amend my previous statement.
Unless he starts acting up next week, and then we'll have words.
I feel like I think Emra's coming back this next episode, and she's specifically working with Kara, and they're supposed to be going like head to head. So I feel like it's going to be like two different things because they're going to disagree on how to take down Pestilence, because I'm sure Emra will want to kill her, whereas Kara won't. And then in the background, Emra's probably going to be a little salty because she knows that her husband still has feelings for Kara.
Yeah.
So
I agree with that. My own prediction is that Lena is clearly the key to curing Sam, and therefore Sam will survive the season, because Lena is a genius, but she will have to do something unsavory to save Sam, and that will attract Supergirl's negative attention, and then it will remind Kara that they're supposed to be friends, and they will actually have a storyline again.
It will remind her that she's a Luther.
Exactly. I forgot to mention in my dislikes that, again, nobody gave a shit where Lena was, and or Sam. Except for James. Because, like, again, they had a group outing, or a group thing, and no one cared. Hey, where's Lena and Sam? Who even hang out with?
Because I feel like in the first half of the season, they really set up the whole...
Yeah.
We are best friends Alex forever. Alex was helping her, and you, like, 2 minutes ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I feel... And this is probably going to go at the end of the season with my dislikes, but I do feel like... Never mind, I'll just keep it to the end.
Okay. Are you guys ready for my Krypton recap?
Yes.
All right.
Listen, that's what she meant to Krypton.
Krypton! Civil Wars answers many of our General Zod questions, including what his ultimate goal is. Apparently, Brainiac was always going to collect Kandor City, leaving Krypton unstable and causing its explosion 200 years later. So Zod is here to stop that from happening, while Adam Strange is here to make sure it does happen? Sounds like Adam doesn't even know himself. Oops! Zod's plan is to find a secret weapon hidden inside Kryptonopolis's archives, which might actually stand a chance against Brainiac. But Adam proposes that instead, they just let the city get taken, the planet explode, and everyone they know die. Just as Superman can fly around in a yellow sun in 200 years' time. Naturally, Seg chooses the former option. So he, Zod, and Lyta come across a door with a strange sigil that they were looking for, and it turns out it's the houses of El and Zod superimposed on each other. And the blood of Seg and Zod opens the door, which is when the matriarch of some people that I cannot pronounce shows up to tell them what a bad idea it is to release, dun-dun-dun, Doomsday!
Oh, not the Kraken.
Not the Kraken. Over in Kootown, Darren and Nyssa plot to take out the High Priestess via bomb, but Jaina's gotta make sure her future son-in-law, Devan, is on their side. It seems like he is, as the High Priest pardons some Black Zero bomber dude, and Nyssa hands over a low-ranking officer who questioned the move to Dev. So Dev takes him to a safe house, where they plan to pin the death of the High Priest on this random, but the loyal little soldier wants to speak with the voice of Rao first, which leads to Jaina just killing him early to protect their plan. Meanwhile, precious Ona is doing her duty and trying to be a good little word of Rao, but the sentry-infected voice of Rao basically says he'll kill her if she fails. So no pressure there. Thankfully, she surprises him by saying she would rather serve him outside than live forever in his brain, or whatever the fuck he was saying. So she gets to stay alive for now. When the actual ceremony takes place, Dev-Em saves civilian lives by calling out the bomb early. But once they have the voice of Rao in hand, he removes his golden mask to show them his disgusting parasite face, which then proceeds to kill several soldiers. And that's what you missed on Krypton.
I was gonna say, I know another L and Zod that like to be superposing.
Should've said that. That's beautiful.
Anywho.
Yes. So, what did you guys like about Krypton?
Well, I did like that Seg and Lyta fought side by side in what feels like episodes that they've kind of just been interacting, but not really. Mm-hmm. And then they kept asking each other what they should do, and then followed suit, and they felt very in tune. Mm-hmm. Bonus, Lyta actually brought up the fact that she still hoped they'd have a future together, and that she still has that hope, despite General Zod kind of bringing up doubt. I also like that Seg felt like he had more of a purpose and direction this episode, because mm-hmm. he's been very lost, narratively speaking. And while he was trying to get Jaina to do his bidding, I did still like watching Darren Vex, which is his name, and I forgot. I enjoyed watching him squirm under her intense gaze because she is just a force, and even he's scared of her.
I like that wording. Squirm under her intense gaze.
Speaking of Jaina, I at least like that she stayed asking the right questions and still demanded answers from someone who has been largely secretive about the whys. And her calling Darren out for his selfishness, Jaina, you know, she went down.
We're not drinking.
It sounds like we are.
No. It sounds like we are. We have not bought tequila yet, so.
All right, Jaina's a real MVP. Anyway, I also like that Dev is so loyal to Lyta that he's willing.
The other one.
I haven't. We just act asleep. We're not drunk. That Dev is so loyal to Lyta that he's willing to betray Rao for her and help Jaina in her mission. And it's also nice to see how much he respects Jaina, and also that there's a member of the Sagittarii who isn't all gung-ho about Rao, even while being the closest person to him. And I like that the plot finally seemed to move along and that Darren actually revealed why he's doing what he's doing, and that it didn't take long to reveal what exactly was behind the big door that these people, whose name I forget, wanted to protect.
I just think they're like the moon people or something.
Yeah, I think they're called Sithonians or something like that, but I can't.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't remember them. That's terrible. And finally, I also like that House Zod and House El are connected, and the fact that Adam wasn't telling the entire truth actually made him more fascinating and gave him some more meaty scenes to work with.
I agree with you about Seg and Lyta. Like, I like that they were kind of like partners and working off of each other, and she would look to him to lead it sometimes, and then he would turn back and look to her to lead. They would like trade off the gun and everything. It's pretty cool. I really love that there is a House El and Zod combined house sigil. I just think it's like another clue that, you know, Seg and Lyta are like eternally connected in this large mythological narrative. I like that Jaina and Dev were teaming up to work together. Like, Dev was really stepping up because Jaina asked him to, and because he's still in love with Lyta. And I like that Seg and Lyta and her son, General Zod, also had like a lot of scenes together, both with Zod, with each of them individually as well. Dev is just so sweet, such a pure, innocent soul. Yeah, I am glad that when he realized that the hall would be packed with innocent victims, he and Jaina came up with a backup plan to take out Rao, like, in a less explodey fashion. So that was great. At first I thought he was just like turning,
like, he chickened out
on it, but then when they came in the room, I was like, oh yes, I got it now. It was a good plan too.
If only he didn't have weird snakes on his face.
Exactly. Like, he really took that kiss and to heart and, like, committed treason for her. Like, I can't imagine how that conversation will go the next time they see each other. Like, oh, how was your day? It's like, oh, you know, remember how you kissed me and said you loved me because you thought you were going to die? Well, I decided to get a head start and join the family by committing murder, treason against the boys of Rao with your mom. How about you?
I released Doomsday.
Oh, you know, I just saved my boyfriend from my future son, and then we all teamed up together to potentially release this little monster into the world. To stop another monster from eating our city. So, you know. Yay!
I like to attend.
Small dinner conversation. I really enjoyed, like, all the, like I said, all the small moments between Zod and Lyta and Zod and Seg, actually. And I've never really been that deep into Superman lore, so I only know, like, Zod equal bad. But so far, he seems to be portrayed in kind of, like, the same style. It reminded me of, I can't remember the author's name, but he wrote Wicked, which... super popular book, super even more popular play. It was his most famous of the series that he's written. But he's also written in the same line for, I believe, Maleficent. And I'm pretty sure, like, the evil stepmother in Cinderella.
Gregory Maguire,
yes. And it's kind of like, it shows the perspective of the so-called bad guys from the other side. So, like, you know, you only know the Disney princesses, like, goody-two-shoes side. And then you get to see through his books, like, what about these women were more complex and complicated than the Disney side would have you believe, kind of thing. And I feel like that's how they're working with Zod right now, and just making him seem like a very interesting character. And it's kind of cool to see his history, like, the, we know, like, the history from Superman's side, but what is it like through Zod's side, and is it really as black and white as it seems? So I like that a lot.
I definitely agree with that. Like, this episode had me rooting for Zod, because I was like, he's the one that makes sense. I don't know what's going on right now. But...
you betrayed Adam.
I'm sorry, I betrayed Adam. Well, Adam betrayed me, really. That's what happened. I still love him, but he's in timeout right now. Timeout with Todd Helbing. Anyway. Yeah, I did really like how Jaina counted on Deb's love for Lyta and his loyalty to her, and that paid off. Like, he showed that his devotion to both, like, to House Zod or to Jaina as his leader was greater than, you know, whatever devotion he has to the boy with Rao. And, of course, his devotion to Lyta. Bless his heart. I love my sweet, loyal son. I don't want him used. I'm so sad. But, anyway, I do love how she then turned around and defended the dude that she later killed. But at first she was like, he's fucking right. Like, you're the selfish one. So yeah, I liked that she, like you said, she was questioning it every step of the way. Even though she ultimately followed through with the plan.
That
was appropriate.
Yeah.
Anyway, I liked how they both worked together to try to find like the lesser evil, like Jess said. So yeah, they both show that they're really smart, that they are loyal, but also intelligent enough to question. Yes. Anyway, so I'm sad for Deb all the time. I think he's my new Loki. He's my new stealth fave. he's replacing Adam for the week.
Oh no.
Of dudes that I love in Krypton. There's only two of them. Anyway. That's not true. General Zod can join now, too.
Yeah.
I love all these dudes. Great! So many dudes, not named Zeg. Anyway. So, yeah, Jaina killing his ass was, like, shocking, but also expected, but also, like, her face, like, when Deb comes in and, like, you see, like, that she, like, didn't want to have to do that, but they look at her like, well, we had to do that. Okay, moving on. I like that moment. Darren was gross and horrible this episode, but at least he's more relevant now. Like, I understand what he's going for, so I'm like, all right. I'm with you, but I'm not with you. I hate you, but I'm with your story. I understand what's happening now. Yes, Deb standing up to Daddy Vex and then standing down when Jaina told him to. Again, I love Deb. That's all I'm saying. Okay, I loved Zod also. I loved how he revealed what happened with Kandor City and with Brainiac, especially because it creates a believable and interesting tension between Zeg and Adam, which before it's just been like, hey, what's up? Come help me save your grandson. Okay! And so now it's like... there's real stakes here, and there is a real, like, moral dilemma to deal with, which I think is interesting. And it helped them give their best performances of the series so far, I think. And I loved Zod and Lyta having their conversations, and Lyta learning about how she changed after Kandor was collected or blown up or whatever. And that she starts to think, like, oh, I became like my mom. Like, that's what it sounds like. But Zod is like, yeah, but you taught me to be, like, the soldier that I am. And, like, I obviously love you, so I'm cool with it. But but Lyta's like, I don't think I'm... this doesn't sound good to me. I don't like that. But, yeah, it was really, like, it was bittersweet. Yeah. I was like, bitterness and yet sweet. That's the word for that is bittersweet. So... yeah, especially the line where she said that she fashioned, or he said that she fashioned him into a weapon. Like, I was like, oh no, this is the worst, but in a good way. Anyway, like y'all said, I love that the houses of El and Zod are connected, even though Zod stole his mom's thunder. I definitely thought that Zeg and Lyta were into the blood thing together, but instead he was like, let's be buddies! But, you know, it does help sort of set up, like, you know, like, I'm trying to imagine, like, Zod fighting with Superman, being like, your granddad was way cooler than you! So, that'll be interesting. And I like that it was Doomsday in the end. I mean, you know, when they said Doomsday, and you're like, oh, shit! They're gonna release Doomsday to stop Brainiac? That sounds like shit. That's not gonna go well. So yeah, I like that. And what do we not like, ladies?
I do dislike that Jaina is now working for Darren, and that she has to kill one of her good officers in order to continue doing so, because I know that hurts her, and I felt bad.
That was sad. He felt like, you could see, like, the pride in his eyes, and he thought that he did well for her.
Yes!
Yeah, and she was proud of him, like, you're doing the right thing, and I had to kill you for it.
I'm so sorry!
Yeah.
Okay, it was bad.
But it was good. She's like, that was in my life, bitch! Anyway... I didn't like that it happened, but they did it well.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And I also dislike that poor Dev is also sucked into Darren's plans through loyalty. Sucks. It's more of the I dislike it.
Yeah, who said that we were objective here?
And while Doomsday was a nice little, you know, him showing up was a nice surprise. Mm-hmm. I hope it was more than just that, since they made a big deal out of opening the door to be, you know, that it had to be protected, and then a big deal about opening the door, and they all freaked out and tried to shoot each other. So I hope that more comes out of this. And I'm not sure what's going on with the voice of Rat right now, but I also can't stand whenever he's speaking with Ono, because it's creepy.
Yes.
She's a child. And I dislike the fact that we don't know what he's going to use her for, and I don't like the idea of her potentially being used for something evil, or, like, just thinks that she'll be swallowed and eaten.
Yeah, I thought he was trying to eat her.
He was, wasn't he? He was like, he can live forever in my mind. No, no.
Poor child. Okay, so this is not a dislike for this episode per se, but it's a general dislike. Did Seg forget his parents existed? I don't understand. He never mentions them. He doesn't bring them up.
Would you like him to be on the Barry train of grief?
If he gives him something to do.
Right, they didn't even have to die at this point. Like,
true.
He could be like, oh, you time travel? How'd you get back? I could go back and see my parents. I don't know. Yeah. That won't happen, but it's a thought. And
he creates Krypton Point.
Which won't be interesting, but anyway, Nyssa still doesn't have much going on for her besides being her dad's lackey and having feelings for a guy who's practically non-existent in her life again. So I just want to know what her journey is. Like, she still isn't really that good of a character, and the writers need to make sure that they work more on her, whatever the hell she's going to be in the future. Because I'm not buying it. I'm not buying what they're selling.
Ooh, okay. I'm sad that my Adam Seg, El Strange. Since we're in Mexico, it would be El Strange. I'm sad that their bromance hit a rough patch, but, like, Adam didn't really even come with, like, the best sales pitch ever. Mm-hmm. Like, why would Seg want to willingly stand by and let his planet die when he knows he can do something to stop it for a future he doesn't even know and will never live to see? And Superman's not even going to save Krypton. Like, Adam wants Seg to let Kandor die so Superman can save his world.
Yep.
And, like, there's no stakes in it for Seg, so I want to do that. So, like, I'm going to talk about it. Like, we're Team Zod over here.
In this house, we stand Zod.
But I am a little salty that General Zod did the blood thing with Seg instead of Lyta. Like, stop cock blocking my moment, dude. This is not for you. Like, back up. So, yeah, that's, you know, it's just a little bit of salt right there. The Brainiac with on a thing, like you said, it's just really kind of disturbing. And if you're going to eat her, just eat her. And, like, stop being creepy about it, I guess. I don't know. You know. Darren Vex continues to get on my fucking nerves. Like, he's so arrogant and condescending, and he's the worst kind of, like, nouveau riche douchebag. And Jana, like, is not your servant, asshole. So, like, the callous way he just, like, decides to throw other people's lives away, and suddenly thinks that Jaina is going to do whatever he says now. I'm like, fuck you, dude. And if I cared about Nyssa, it would be for her double-crossing her father. But I guess the writers don't care about her either, because she's not. So I don't really know. Like, I don't have anything to root for in this side of the storyline. So,
yeah, like, she wants what her father wants, but does she want what her father wants? Like, what does she want?
Like, what
does
she, we don't know. So, you know. Figure it out. Right.
Figure it out and let's go.
And then lastly, like, the mole people, they are mole people. They're supposed to be, like, protecting Doomsday. Like this y'all's guards? Like, the most, like, dangerous weapon in the world is guided by, like, mole people. We haven't even signed, like, I don't know how long. Like, for real? Like, this is, like, y'all, like, these are the people that are protecting, like, Doomsday from the world.
Aww.
Okay.
This is accurate. They did not do a good job. They should not get paid. Yes. So yeah, Adam hoping that Seg and Lyta would just let Brainiac take Kandor in order to protect some shitty future that they don't even know about was super dumb. That is not my man anymore. Because he's too stupid. Like, even though I did love that he was like, I didn't listen to him. I didn't finish the sentence. I just came right over because I was like, I gotta stop that. So I was like, all right, okay, Adam. But anyway, yeah, leave Ona alone. I don't like this. I'm scared. I don't know what Brainiac's gonna do. I don't want it. I just want her to be safe with Kim. Just like, let him raise her. Why? So yeah, I hate it. And yeah, I also feel like that's why we're here. Like the voice of Rao. Like that's the point. And yet I just don't care. I'm like, this is, I don't care what's happening. Oh yeah, and the lighting for Second Light is adorable. Scene about the future was so fucking dark. Why? I can't see their fucking faces. Let me see them. I hate lighting.
I feel like I'm the person who's like walks up like Jack Sparrow to Will and behind the camera. He's like to the writers. That was their moment. You missed it.
Yeah. Yes.
Why?
Yeah. Like, I don't understand who likes these things. Like, you don't want me to see it? It's like they specifically light it so that then I can go in and gif it later and put, like, lightness 3 times.
And then I'm making you do more work.
Exactly. Like, why? Anyway. People want to see what they're watching. Yeah. That's a side note. Anyway. Zod literally said that traveling back changes things on its own. And he is here to stop Kanda from exploding. So I don't know why Seg and Lyta talk about the future like it's set in stone when literally what is happening right now changes the future.
Like, so, Zod is even risking his own...
Yeah, existence.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he serves Krypton first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know why someone didn't bring that up. I was just waiting for that. Like, I get that they were, like, trying to go for the star-crossed lovers thing, but I was like, this is y'all's chance. Like, this is your asset. Exactly.
Fuck it up.
Exactly. So I was like, do the opposite of what you're doing right now. Anyway. I don't know what I meant to write here. It was clearly 3 o'clock in the morning when I was typing. Someone did not try hard enough to stop them from killing everyone in the universe, and I am disappointed in them. But I don't know who I'm disappointed in. Oh, yeah. At the very end. The Doomsday thing. Right? Oh. So, like, if Adam Strange knows who Zod is, he knows who Brainiac is, he should know who Doomsday is, right? I feel like you should try a little bit harder to stop them.
Adam only wants Superman, okay?
Exactly! He doesn't care anything about Superman! And then Zod starts to... Yeah, Zod starts shooting randoms, and then, like, Seg and Adam are just kind of like, well, we're here.
Time to go.
Exactly! So I was like, what is happening in this scene? Too much is going on. I didn't understand the point that I don't know what the fuck I wrote in this sentence.
I think Dan was probably Adam.
Yes, Dan was Adam. You're right. Adam did not try hard enough to stop him from killing everyone in the universe. That was my sentence. Okay, what do we predict?
Oh, okay, so this is, it's not going to start off as a prediction, but I find it hard to believe that General Zod is also Lyta's son. I was trying to do the math in my head. So Krypton blows up in 200 years, and he's around... to battle that with Clark at some point. And we don't know if he was stuck in the Phantom Zone, how old he's really supposed to be, when he was born, and all of that stuff. So, like, what year did he end up landing in? Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. Yeah. I feel like so, Kryptonians are supposed to live longer, maybe, but I don't think that we know that. We just assume that.
Right.
I don't really know. Like, when, like, where was the jump? And this, again, like, I'm not, like, deep into Superman lore, so I don't know if this has been explained already. But Seg clearly can't fly. He doesn't have super strength or lasers coming out of his eyes. So where in, like, the generation did they develop that?
Yellow Sun.
Yellow Sun. Okay. Yellow Sun, yes. Thank you very much.
Either way, aside from all the math that I'm trying to do in my head that's not working out for me, he is still Lyta's son or grandson. But I still think that at the end of the day, that Lyta and Seg are still going to somehow be together because superhero stories love the whole destined to be together trope, so they're still together, and the actor who plays General Zod, we've learned, is biracial. So, it could still happen.
It could still happen, yeah.
So you're saying that Zod and Jor-El could actually be brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I just need a fucking chronology map because of House Zod and House El, because, like, they, you know, they're close enough to create their own fucking sigil, so... How long ago was this? And then, you know...
That they don't know about it anymore?
They don't know about it? Like, how did you not recognize there's a distinct S pattern?
Or did somebody from the future come back and do
that? Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I don't know, like, if... Because I feel like superimposing sigils is something that Seg and Lyta would do from the future, you know, to create their own house. Which is another reason why it's salty that Zod stepped in and gave his own blood. But, like... Did they create Doomsday in the future and just, like, whatever they have him encased in also exists in the past? and it's more timey-wimey kind of stuff. And so, like, this is something that they've done before because they thought that Brainiac was, you know, Doomsday was the thing that was supposed to be beat Brainiac, so they created him in the future, and then he's still in the past kind of thing.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be that. I certainly got nothing. So, I will take both of y'all's happy predictions for Second Light of future health and children. And I think we can move on to Ladies with Gumption!
Woo! Yes.
Nominations for the week. Well, for side A.
Kara. Telling off my
own. Yeah, Kara telling off my own. I mean, that's mine. Yeah.
Kara for telling off Mono. I think Lena for...
Oh, yeah.
Helping Sam. And then if...
Damages.
If I had to give one for Krypton, would we give it to Jaina for... Because she...
But she's, like, not doing... Like, she did it well, but it's not what she wants to do. You know what I mean? Like...
She does what she doesn't want to do very well, though.
Yes! Yes, she does.
This is still salty about last week that Jaina didn't win.
No, I'm not salty. But I'm just saying, like, because Gumption is not always positive.
Right. It's not always positive. She did it well, though. Yes, for sure.
But I think it's going to be like a Supergirl showdown for side A.
Yeah.
Well, for Kara, besides telling off Mon-El for me, it was just that she regained her own narrative. She was able to express her emotions, negative as they may be, to him, which she didn't. She sort of got to do last season, but it was more that she was just, I know, she was just frustrated, but he would never listen to her. It was just, whatever.
Yeah, she reevaluated her relationship, and she sort of reestablished what her boundaries were.
Right.
And...
But!
And it's hard to take off rose-colored glasses.
But!
Yes.
She would never have done that.
If not for the serum. Because
she said that she wouldn't have done it if it wasn't.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Whereas Lena is just doing what Lena does.
Yeah.
And she went pretty far to get her friend to see the truth, you know?
She raised that mirror.
She broke you to bring you back.
Yes.
All good points. Damn.
She just...
Just coming at me with the logic.
Just saying.
Wait, am I, like, the last one to decide?
Well, I mean, you're clearly going with Kara, right? You're saying Kara.
No, I'm saying Lena.
Damn it, you're saying Lena. I don't know where it's. You're saying Lena. You want it to be Kara.
I could say Laura.
Make it happen. Laura!
I mean, you're right that Kara wouldn't have said those things, minus the psychic anomaly.
Yeah. It sort of does take away the agency side of things. Mm-hmm. Like, she still made the realization afterwards, but
at the end of the day, she still owned up to those feelings and said that she was sticking with them and not going back.
Okay.
Hateration in your nation.
No, but this is tough. I want it to be Kara.
I know you want it to be Kara.
But I also see
the accuracy of Lena.
The accuracy.
The drive of Lena.
Yeah, of course. I'm a fair person.
You're an objective person. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have to give it to Lena for side A, even though I also would like it to be Kara, like you're saying, for those reasons, because I felt like it's been so long coming, like we've been waiting for so long.
Yeah.
But there's still more road to mine for Kara to regain her story.
She can get Lady with Gumption when she finally breaks up permanently.
Or when she does something else that doesn't involve him.
Yes.
Okay. So for side,
save that for next week.
Right? Fingers crossed. Alright, so side A, Lena. Now we'll take a quick break, and when we return, May will introduce you to my recaps for side B, as well as our feedback. Because all of y'all had stuff to say about Flash. Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 33. I am your introductor for side B. For Flash Arrow, there's no outrunning grief, and life isn't fair. We had some feedback from a few people about Flash specifically. First, we had Tanika, who DM'd us and
first, she loved the podcast and thought the episode was great for Iris this past week, or no, last week, the week before, and thinks the next episode looks even better. She hopes Iris's journalism comes back into play soon. She liked Leo, but hated that Siren X was a Nazi. I did too. And brings up again how it feels like Iris's leadership position is being taken away by Barry. Thought he was dismissive after he told her to go watch the satellites like a hawk. Not a great moment. But what was really bothering her is the writers only seem to value Iris's leadership when the plot demands it. And she thinks that Barry this past episode kind of turned into Oliver Light. The next one is similar. There's Lisa, Ebony Angel Vibes on Tumblr, who sent us an email. And she thinks, in Jess's words, Barry needs to square the fuck up. Lisa is tired. Barry's moody behavior has been bothering her for the last two episodes. And even though Ralph's death affected everyone, she thinks the writers made it seem as though he was more upset about Ralph's death than Nora, Eddie, Ronnie, Henry, and HR combined. She nicknamed Barry, Barry Queen. And her advice was to suck it up, buttercup, two tears in a bucket, fuck it. But she hopes that he's moved on by 420. However, she did come back and tell us that she rewatched the episode and that she had calmed down, but that she would like the season to be over so we can look forward to happier things in season 5.
Yeah. Like, first of all, like, I'm glad that she was able to rewatch the episode with, like, a clearer mind, because I think that's important for a lot of people in fandom right now. Barry Queen made me LOL IRL. Congratulations to that. I just seen, like, a lot of frustration towards Barry in the last two episodes. And while I understand it, I'm going to have to, like, defend my son a little bit here, because I feel like some of it is going into the extreme. And I think, like, what Lisa did, it's good to take some days away, step back. If you're that deep into fandom and the frustration that you are equating or trying to frame Barry as being, like, emotionally abusive, I've seen people say that he's been dismissive as Iris, as if, and they're saying this, as if you're too pretty to think so don't, emotionally abusive ass husband Clifford DeVoe isn't, like, right there showing you exactly what that kind of husband is, and that's completely not what Barry is. Like, Barry is moody, but, like, not all the emotions that he's going to express are going to be positive all the time. And this is far from the first time that Barry's made excuses for his face. And Iris is fully capable of deciding for herself whether that's bullshit or not, and whether she wants to bye bye or not. And then when Iris gets mad, like, she'll straight up, like, ghost you, leave you on red, and she'll, like, let her feelings marinate and then explode them on you, whether you're ready for them or not. And she's done this with Barry, she's done it with Eddie, she's done it with Joe. Mm-hmm. So it is, it's like, and people were mad about her doing that sometimes in season one. And so it's like, you may not like how that character chooses to express their frustration, but it doesn't take away from the fact, it doesn't make Iris a bad character that she right. has feelings. And it doesn't make Barry a bad character that he has feelings. Don't let them having feelings keep you from looking at from the narrative. If you have to step back from that, then that's something that I think would help. So, you know, the whole thing about Barry mourning Ralph more than any other person that's died. Like, he mourned Nora for 16 years. He flashpointed when Henry died, so he'd go back and spend 6 more months with his happy with his parents. Ronnie wasn't Barry's story to grieve. It was Caitlin's, and the same with Eddie and Iris. So it's not like he's, you know, grieving these people any less than with HR. Than with Ralph. And then, like, HR, Ronnie and Eddie, for that matter, were all grown-ass men who made their own decisions. And whether you like Ralph or not, Barry felt responsible for Ralph. You know, someone who got powers that didn't ask to be thrust into the situation between DeVoe and Barry. And Barry took responsibility for Ralph. And he's the one that brought Ralph in and tried to mold him and protect him. And he failed. There's some parts of the episode where I thought it was a little bit cheesy, like the montage of Ralph. But, like, the grief is understandable to me why Barry, to some degree, would feel bad about Ralph's death.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, like, as far as, like, West Allen's concerned, I was bothered by the distance both last week and this week. But unlike the Marley's DeVoe situation, in which she tries to get through him consistently throughout the episode, and he never comes around to her point of view, Barry comes around to Iris' point of view. He calls Sharon Hinkle to set up a therapy session, and he asks Iris to come with him to the therapy session so he can talk through his feelings. which is what Iris wanted him to do in the first place. So it's not like he doesn't literally say, I'm sorry for being an ass, but he does acknowledge that she was right. And I think that that was the point of that scene. So you didn't get him saying, I'm sorry, but he does show through his actions and his words that he is sorry. So
I completely agree. And I feel like I've had to step back. I haven't really been checking social media. I felt very defensive, too, especially since people are coming at him, like you said. Like, he's suddenly a villain and abusive, like, DeVoe. And he might have been a bit distant and moody, but he's always been like this when he's been upset. And I won't expand on much because, you know, Jess hit the nail on the head. But she's absolutely right. Iris didn't speak to Eddie for, like, a whole week in season one. Or whatever, and I know that he's like, we didn't have sex for two, or some shit. So she was pissed at him, and Barry wasn't pissed directly at Iris.
No.
But mad at himself, and that ended up turning to lashing out a bit when he told her to watch the comms. So, like, he's been moody since 4:14 at least.
Yes.
And then things haven't gotten better, and it's only been a few days since Ralph's been dead. So it's not like he's had a couple years, a couple months to mourn. He gets to mourn, even if it's a character many hated, including myself. It's just healthy for him to do so and for us to watch him do it. And then just as it right again in that making an appointment to see Dr. Finkel was him making an effort because he felt bad and knew Iris was right. And he didn't go alone. He brought her with him. Mm-hmm. And even though some people may have disliked his behavior, painting Barry as evil or DeVoe level abusive is not at all the parallel that was trying to be drawn.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Right. We'll discuss.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's only human. He's not always going to be an angel. Anyway.
I will add on just that I think that sometimes people take their frustration with the show or, like, with a larger meta-narrative point, if you will, and then direct it onto the characters. Like, I even saw people who were upset that Barry didn't help Iris off that couch and that it showed how cold he is towards her right now or, like, how... But it's not Barry who didn't help her off that couch and they didn't write it that way.
Right.
It's, definitely Candace, who struggled to get up from the couch.
Because she was missing an
arm. And Grant did not know Candace was going to struggle to get up off the couch.
He didn't see her.
Yeah, he didn't see her.
He didn't even look in that direction, so how did he know that she was struggling?
So then he was like, oh, shit. And then they didn't do another take. At the end. That's what happened. So sometimes it's not as deep as you think it is what I'm saying. And in the narrative, Iris could tell that Barry wasn't dealing with his Ralph emotions, and that's where her concern was. She didn't feel hurt personally by him, and I know that that also leads you to say, like, oh, well, you're doing the strong black woman trope, and, like, she's, you know, she has to be strong for everyone, she's to carry the weight. But if this season has done anything, it is allow Iris to have her perspective and to get angry. Like, she blew up at Barry in couples therapy in 402, and she got the apology she deserved there. And she explained in 416, for example, why she felt like she had to go back to journalism and why she felt like she had to prove herself, right? So again, it was another instance of her expressing those negative emotions and getting the response that she deserves to have. Same with when Barry went to jail, he had to be strong for her because she was having a mini breakdown over it. So even though it feels in these last three episodes, it's, you know, been like, oh, we're not getting the Iris that we want, or we're not getting the story that we want because it's been all Ralph. I don't think it is actually, like, the root of the story they're telling underneath, right? The story they're telling underneath is something else. And soon we will see that come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. And she did get some more Ralph, where she talks
about
her
feelings in
this episode, too.
Yeah.
So.
First, I want to get in. We also did get an email from Angela.
Oh, shit! Angela and Ivy! Fuck.
Angela and Ivy.
Okay. Take it back. So, we got two emails from two of our favorite listeners about Flash.
Uh-oh, show them favorites.
Well, no, you're all our favorite listeners, but they don't send as many emails. So, they get a new favorite claim. So, first, Angela from, with an accent, you can read her articles on K-dramas if you go there. And she had many questions for the Flash that she wanted us to discuss, such as, how did DeVoe know about Earth Siren X? Because he seems to have psychic powers that he's able to come up with the possibility of Earth X Siren coming to stop the fallout transport. And the only thing he didn't account for was Barry's feelings. Do you want to know? is this because of how the multiverse works? Are there...
I do feel like I have a theory for that. At bare minimum, I feel like... I mean, DeVoe is obviously still around when the Nazis showed up. during the crossover. So
and he had cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And he what?
He has cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
Have they even discovered them?
No.
So he knows about the Nazis. He could probably extrapolate that they're doppelgangers of everyone. So if there's a siren here, there's a siren there. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like he took away Caitlin's cold powers on purpose so that they would go get Leo from Earth-X because they needed someone cold to move Fallout. Whether he knew about Siren X or not, when she came out of the portal, I think there was enough time for him to, like, get a plan from that moment. So he didn't really have to know that there's going to be an Earth-X. It's just going to be the last Nazi alive. to come.
How did it pick up so fast off the completed story anyway?
Yeah, so that's, I feel like that's kind of, you know, simple version is that writers have plot holes and they just do sex machina their way out of them. Mm-hmm. But that would be my simple explanation.
I like your Watsonian mm-hmm. explanation for it.
Okay.
The one the writers didn't even think about.
Exactly. Know. It's not the Doyle's one, but it is the Watsonian one. She's also very angry about how things are going with Marlene's because she wanted them to be the equivalent of West Allen, but evil. And we were totally on board with that. So, you know, like I like her character arc now, but I wish it hadn't come
at the drugging.
Exactly.
All of that.
Exactly. I would have been happy with her realizing that DeVoe's plan actually is shit and that she didn't want this for him and then turning on him instead of him just, you know,
being shit.
Exactly. she's sad that we don't get to see Leo and Ray's wedding. She at the very least wished that the team had said they would go to it because it's not like DeVoe's going to do anything while they're not there. Mm-hmm. He's literally just waiting for them to do something so he can fuck it up. So why not? Although I guess technically this week he was going to start the Enlightenment. They don't know that, though, so true. They should have gone anyway. And, of course, she's very happy that Dibny is dead, because who isn't? But she also wants the other busmanas to live, so it's like...
Yeah.
Ralph! Look, exactly. I felt sorry more bad for when Becky died than when Ralph died.
When who died?
Becky.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We also got an email from our beloved Ivy, who also writes with us on With an Accent. And you could read her articles.
I feel like they start start name dropping on watching.
Every single time. Anyway, she said, oh, y'all want feedback? She liked the episode. She enjoyed seeing Leo and is interested in what the Finger is doing again. I need him to die because of what he's doing to Marlies, and I would still like to know what he wants. She liked Barry and Iris' therapy, but she wanted Barry to apologize directly to Iris. Didn't you know? But she did love them this episode. And she's given up trying to understand Taylor Frost. It's just
easier. You know, save yourself a headache. Let it go.
Let them reboot it. It's fine.
However, she has decided that Ralph Dibny is worse than V613 on Scandal because even though the Flash killed the thing that was ruining it, Ralph continues to do it from beyond the grave. But at least he is dead. And we love you too, Ivy. Thank you. Speaking of...
Let's get into that Flash.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Take it away again.
Flash. Fury Rogue tackles Barry's need to deal with his grief over Ralph's death, as well as the audience's need to deal with their grief over Barry's grief over Ralph's death. We all wish he would move on.org, but first he's got to let it all out before he accidentally gets his teammates captured and or killed, which is exactly a possibility now that they're tasked with transporting human nuclear bomb Fallout to a secret Argus facility where DeVoe might not find him. Iris tries getting Barry to open up via Sharon Finkel's brand of therapy, but it seems like this is going to take the Herculean efforts of Earth-X's Leo Snart, who gets recruited to help keep Fallout cool during the big move. Unfortunately for the team, Leo's arrival comes with Siren X's as well. She's the Nazi version of Laurel Lance, and she's more than happy to blow up the city as payment for Dark Arrow's death. She intercepts a battle between Barry and DeVoe, in which Barry freezes because his Ralph feels got too strong. And so she absconds with Caitlin, Joe, and Fallout. Leo immediately senses that Barry is not dealing with the loss appropriately after witnessing him talk back to his wife, and thus gives Barry the sage advice of a literal war hero. One annoyingly long flashback of Ralph moments later, and Barry is able to get a hold of himself in the next fight and successfully take Fallout where he needs to go. Then he schedules another therapy session with Iris and actually opens up to her and to his therapist like a grown man should. Yay!
Woohoo!
DeVoe, on the other hand, fails to learn any of the lessons Barry did, He's a mean old grump to Marlise, who is just trying to make him happy and rekindle their romance, and he doesn't seem to understand how human emotions work and can't account for them in his million plans. So even though he's able to locate Fallout at the end of the day and feels good about the upcoming enlightenment, whatever that is, he has no idea that he's just alienated his wife for the last fucking time. Meanwhile, Harry is losing his smarts thanks to the dark matter he absorbed. This news comes at the perfect time because now suddenly Sisko wants his own thinking cap to help problem solve. Desperate to keep Sisko from creating one while not willing to reveal his own secret, Harry procrastinates with a bunch of sorry excuses until there is no escape. Once he confesses to Sisko, he too gets the pep talk of a lifetime and learns that people don't love him because he's a genius. They love him because he's a verbally abusive dick with a heart of gold. Aw, shucks. Finally, Caitlin misses Killer Frost's post-it notes, so she starts sciencing the shit out of her DNA in between injecting everyone with the same needle. Iris thinks that DeVoe didn't really steal Killer Frost's powers, and since Iris is always right, Caitlin finds out that Killer Frost is still somewhere within her, waiting to be activated. And where is all this leading? We don't know, but we sure wish we had an invite to Leo and Rain's wedding. And that's what you missed on The Flash. So, ladies, what did we like about this week's episode?
Leo Snart, Wentworth Miller is a gem of a human being, and he really made this episode, which could have been, like, depressing as shit, considering it was about, like, grieving Ralph. He made it shine and feel more cathartic. Mm-hmm. I feel like Leo and Sharon Finkel could open up a practice together. And, or that if Leo knew about Ralph and Killer Frost's deaths, he could have brought his grief puppets with him, like he did for Legends of Tomorrow. He could have made a grief Ralph and a grief Frost. I thought that would be really cute. I thought that he was especially important with getting Barry to confront his feelings. I love his advice to Barry that he can't outrun grief, because I feel that's what Barry's been doing for years now, trying to keep running forward without taking stock of the past. And I love that the writers finally allowed Iris and Snart to exchange dialogue and be cute together, because it has been 84 years and, like, they're never allowed to interact. So, like, this interaction between a Snart and Iris West, I wish we could have also had an E1 Snart back so I could truly get my Cold West crack ship, but I will take this platonic Cold West too, because they were just too cute together. I thought it was really cute / hilarious that Leo congratulated Barry and Sisko on their happy marriage. It's like, where Sisko lives! It's like slept so much on fandom, like, so I'm glad Leo at least appreciates it.
Someone has to.
I know, right?
The writers appreciated more than the other thing.
Also, speaking of the other thing, he had some, like, words of wisdom for Caitlin. And I also thought that Iris and Caitlin had a better scenes this week than last week. Mm-hmm. They both acted more like they wanted to be there, so. Also, I don't get whatever the cryo, whatever gene is thing that they're trying to do to prompt Caitlin to use science to get back Killer Frost. But if it leads to the explanation that I wanted them to use in the first place, that she's a personification of Caitlyn's, like, bottle up emotions, mm-hmm. and that she, like, is the power at first, because it's, like, Caitlyn's bottled it up inside. And the ale just, like, sipped the biggest fucking pot of tea, because I told y'all bitches, and no one wanted to listen to me. But,
I will retweet your article, should that happen.
Yes, that's right. An article which
she wrote.
I wrote an article.
Yes.
Theyoungfolks.com.
Shameless plug. About Killer Frost that nobody read, but listen, aww. It's coming back. Well, I don't know. I don't check.
I can go back.
Anyways, Mariska West's strategy session on how to outthink the thinker was great, and, like, honestly, I legit thought Caitlin had left the room until the camera panned. She was still there. I was like, okay, she's still there. But, I mean, at least, you know, Mariska West got a good strategy session out of it. And I liked that Sisko reminded Harry that there are other things than scientific intelligence that make people capable beings that can accomplish great things. And if only, like, fandom could relate, because, you know, they oftentimes can't when it comes to Iris, at least. I like that, speaking of Iris, I like that she got to share her feelings about Ralph's stuff with Finkel. And as much as I would want Iris to be the one to break through to Barry about how he's handling his grief, mm-hmm. to make up for him being so snappy, I do like that she asked Leo to do it, because she trusted that Leo is what Barry needed at that mm-hmm. moment. And then, like I mentioned earlier, he didn't come out and say, I'm sorry, the words, but I do think his scheduling of the appointment was essentially telling her that he was sorry and that she was right. And he asked her to come with, because he could have gone to Finkel by himself.
Yeah.
But he asked her to come with him specifically.
And thank God he did.
Yes.
So he get those hands.
Those hands.
The tears.
Well, her
the fake tear.
Her prompting of his tears. It's great. Anyway.
Oh, are you done? Okay. Sorry. Barry felt like the lead of his own show again. I felt so relieved. He was getting proper focus. All the characters had something going on for them. And I felt like we weren't wasting too much time teaching someone how to be a decent human being, which is what I've wanted after the last couple of episodes, especially. Mm-hmm. And what I've always liked about Barry, and also what initially drew me to the show, is that he isn't the stereotypical male hero. He has emotions, a lot of them, and they're not just anger, and they've often been used to tell his story. So he's like a sensitive, emotional guy who cares and is in touch with his feelings, which is a rarity in this genre. So I did like that we got to see him kind of going through the stages of grief after Ralph's death, because yes, I know it was about Ralph, no one liked it, but it has only been a few days since he's been gone, and I like that therapy sessions were once again utilized for this. And, you know, Barry has had a lot of death on his shoulders, but he's always dealt with it in an unhealthy way, like trying to go back in time or obsessively trying to find who killed his mother for 14 years. So being able to see it play out in a healthy manner by the end really felt good in terms of his character progression. Sharon Finkel is definitely getting her money's worth. I think Grant's performance almost made me care about Ralph, but only because he cared so, that says a lot about his delivery in the final couple scenes. And I like that he did lean on Iris for support and let her in, where he didn't at the end of the last episode. So he continues to show more growth this season, and scheduling a therapy session himself was a good sign. I did realize that Iris was crying too while watching him, and that, according to Tati, that prompted him.
That's what happened!
Don't rewatch it. I don't know.
No, I'm joking. But she was crying because he was crying.
Yes.
An actress.
And that gave me feels. So it just continues to show me that Candace and Grant are in tune. And I like that he looked at her. He looked to her at one point to be able to continue. And I did wonder if it's because of some of the ridiculous stuff he was forced to say. Which I'll get to in my dislike. but Iris knowing what he needed was a nice touch, and I love that she sent Leo after him too, like Jess said. And I love that she called him by his full first name. She's like, Leonard. And then he's like, alright, you know, I'll go do it. It's fine. I also love that Iris got to express herself and say what she was feeling regarding Ralph's death, because she also had to hang out with him. And yes, this is the most Snart and Iris have interacted, and I was here for all of it. Speaking of Leo, I would like to have Wentworth Miller on the show more often. He's so great. I love that he was used here to his full capacity, which I felt like he wasn't really on Legends. He's fantastic, and his interactions with everyone, and especially Barry, are always great. Leo complimenting Cisco's hair, which is something I've been doing all season aloud while I'm watching my TV. I'm like, yes, what is his conditioner? I need to know.
He really had the best hair this season.
Oh my
god. He's got the best hair.
Yes, and like Cisco blushing was adorable.
That was so cute. I forgot to add that.
It really was. All the little, you know, Leo smart stuff.
Leo makes everything cuter.
Yes, so give me more Leo. That's all. And the scene when Barry goes to his old lab, and I've missed that lab, I'm not gonna lie.
Right?
It was really well done, and like on an emotional and directorial level. Like the shot to the window is very
lean
to his head.
Where he was at first, because he was alone.
Yeah. I know, because everything's covered too.
Oh, because he got fired.
Yeah, he got fired.
I was like, is that Ralph's office?
Indefinitely. The shot through the window as Barry leans his head on Joe's shoulder was great, and even better that Barry and Joe got to actually have an emotional moment, which was phenomenal, and it's been so long, and I want that back. See, so Ralph is gone one episode, we get all these heartfelt things, even though it's about him, but it still exists. So, right, it just goes back to the whole fact that it just feels like we're getting more characters from... And we're getting them back from under the gloomy and oppressive rain cloud that was Ralph. And,
Damn, you have a lot of likes.
Yes. I did like that Caitlin finally feels like she's in control of her Killer Frost arc. She's, like, been more active since she's now decided she actually does want Killer Frost back. Mm-hmm. So her storyline is still a bit messy, but, you know, I appreciate the effort.
You tried.
The Flash passed the Bechdel test this week.
Woo!
So Caitlin and Iris had a conversation. It wasn't weird, and it wasn't about men, and Iris offered to help, and she was okay with that. So, progress. Finally, I did love the fact that Harry was trying to stop Cisco from using the thinking cap, and that Cisco also wouldn't let Harry think he's useless just because he's losing his intelligence. It was a good subplot,
And even better that the show directly, like Jess said, addresses that science or being a scientist and all the pseudoscience garbage we hear often is not what makes a character useful, quote unquote. So thank you very much, writers.
Well-paced episode.
So it's the strength of someone's character is what makes them a good character, which is ultimately why Ralph didn't work as a hero. Mm-hmm. I have to keep hating him. Sorry. Anyway, it was a well-paced episode, and even though Ralph still felt like a part of it, his presence wasn't there, and so we got some heartfelt scenes, humor, and a mixture of subplots that felt like it was just all connected in one form or another. And the parallels between Barry and DeVoe are back this week. So, like, DeVoe, the heartless bastard, versus Harry versus Barry, the heart full of emotion, and so it did feel like Barry's show again. Amazing. And they finally let Barry have a win, even though it was only a perceived win, since he doesn't know just DeVoe like knows where Fallout is,
right?
But hey, you know, it's something.
That was a lot of lights. Damn. I think I actually have a lot too. So yeah, I could already feel a weight being lifted off the show's shoulders with Ralph's death. So even though the episode was less exciting than the back half of 18, I liked it more as a whole. It was the first episode in which I had warm and fuzzy feelings over Harry's story, which has not ever happened. But him going all flowers for Algernon, but still trying to protect Sisko from falling in his wrong-footed steps. At first, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Why does Sisko want to put on a thinking cap? I don't like this shit. And why is Harry helping him? But then I realized Harry was not helping him. Harry was like, oh, I can't find the thing. Oh, no, we can't do it. Oh, shit. So then I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. And I'm glad he learned his lesson and that the writers are playing their power of love strengths because they sure as shit don't know how to play science strengths. So I really liked Sisko's speech when he talked about Jesse. He talked about, you know, being a good father and giving a damn is really what matters. And I think that that's going to come into play later. Just in general, like, as a theme for the season, right? The giving an animal matters. And the return of West Island therapy scenes. Yes. Very pleasing to me. I like that we got a snippet of Iris's feelings on the death. And even though it's Ralph, I like that we finally faced Barry's incorrect attempts to push people away in order to not deal with his pain or in order to shoulder his burdens alone because he thinks he's all over pain. So he needs his wife. He needs his team, and he has to process his grief so that his grief doesn't get the better of him later, just like Leonard said.
Tati, he's Barry Queen.
He's Barry Queen, that's right, Barry Queen. It was a perfect, subtle juxtaposition to DeVoe, who doesn't understand the variable of human emotion, unlike Barry, who understands it all too well, and thinks he can save the world alone, and he alienates his wife in the process. And unlike Barry, he does not learn his lesson, which I loved. Leo, excellent therapist, as Jessica has already pointed out, giving Sharon a run for her money. And since we can't erase the Nazi Earth X plotline from the crossover, I liked hearing Leo talk about the Resistance fighters. Mm-hmm. How many will they lost, how every single one counts, and how every single death, you know, is something that you have to remember because you have to remember the sacrifices. And I thought that Whitewood did a great job with that scene and that it was well written. Like, it really did make me feel like that was real. And of course, there is a very real world parallel to it. So, anyway. Laurel was evil, obviously, but I liked her powers were cool in this episode. You know, I liked seeing how Siren X's powers worked, and I thought, you know, for her, even we'll talk about the dislikes, but at least her motivation was believable. Anyway, I thought it was a great parallel to 207. You know, Iris brought in the big guns of the evil. She brought in Leo to talk to Barry because he wouldn't listen to her, just like in 207, she brought in Henry to talk to Barry because he wouldn't listen to her. And I love that he scheduled that therapy session and physically held on to her for support in that final scene, because there's a nice contrast at the end of last week where he asked her for space, mm-hmm. and they were not touching at all. And this time, you see that he does actually, like, he's letting her in, literally. I mean, that's exactly what she wanted him to do. So everyone got what they wanted. Women talk to each other about something other than dudes, yes. And this time, Candace did not look like she wanted to die, so it was a major improvement. Speaking of Candace, like I said, she cried real tears while listening to Grant slash Barry talk about the non-entity that was Ralph. An actress! So, that's all. What do we not like?
Well, okay, first of all...
first of all, never good fun.
Sisko calling Laurel the second Black Canary was like, hold up. Wait a minute. Because, like, Arrow already fucked up Laurel's legacy, first of all, and tried to make it murky by calling Sarah Canary instead of Black Canary, because they were trying to, like, you know, get one over on DC Comics fans. even though she wore all black. So she's like, wearing all black, but I'm just a canary. I'm not the black canary. And now Cisco's saying that Laurel's the second black canary. It's like, no, the fuck, she's not. So, and then, you know, like, Cisco just confirming Sarah's first just rubs me the wrong way. And I know it's rubbed several Laurel fans the wrong way. Mm-hmm. All he had to do was say that she was a black canary and a hero on Earth One. Like, he didn't even have to, the writers didn't have to include all the other stuff about Sarah at all, or that she was black canary and then white canary. Like, we didn't even know all that. To say that, he didn't ask for that. He asked for Laurel. So say that Laurel's a fucking black canary and she died. Mm-hmm. And, like, call it a day. And then the second thing about that was the fact that Siren X, one, is a Nazi. Mm-hmm. So that's bad. And then two, had a thing for Oliver that was unrequited, which also, like, rubs me the wrong way. Like, first you're saying that she's a second black canary. Then you're saying that her love for Oliver was unrequited. So, like, I mean, like, I guess after the crossover and making, like, Nazi superhero happen, they couldn't, like, realistically rewrite that Oliver was secretly in love with Siren. And I get that they needed the villain of the week to make this whole plot work. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there are a lot of pot shots taken at Laurel that just weren't necessary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't really like what they did there. I didn't mind the grief as much as other people, but I thought that the long-ass dramatic montage of Ralph moments as Barry contemplates whether he should get the fuck up or not was, like, overly dramatic. Like, Barry, you only have, like, a set amount of time, seconds, that you're supposed to be doing. You can't have this long-ass montage. Get the fuck up. And, like, I hate when shows, like, put in these big dramatic flashbacks in the middle of a tension-filled moment when there's something that has to happen in a matter of seconds. Like, Siren could have been, Fallout could have exploded, like, twice or three times by the time Barry decided to, like, get the fuck up and do something about it. So, you know. And it was about Ralph, so I don't really care that much to walk down Ralph's memory. Yeah. And then Harry's ego was, the Harry Sisko storyline, I didn't like that his ego was so big that something that he became addicted to making him smarter is now the cause of his declining intelligence. That's kind of like, that's on you. You know, it's kind of funny.
Karma's a bitch.
Karma is a bitch. Karma was definitely a bitch to him. That's on him. But what I didn't like about that was that he played along with Cisco's idea to make a second hat and went so far as to actually build one and test it out, because I just thought it was really irresponsible to put Cisco in that position and not tell him the whole truth. Like, when he started up the fake hat, I got really just nervous, because, like, it's like, ooh, it's tingling. It's like, take it off his hair.
Right.
Before it catches on fire or something.
Hair.
Yes. He's got to get that insured. And then, you know, it goes without saying, but Clifford's arrogance and blitting against, like, Marlies and him telling her not to think. I was like, dude, you don't shut the fuck up. I'm going to come through this television and, like, knock you out. And I need her to speed up this realization that her husband ain't shit and just join the good guys already. Because mm-hmm. it's, like, over and over again. And I guess, like, she forgets because he manipulates her into forgetting. But we see her realize he's not right. And then she's still there. Mm-hmm. And I just need that. We know where it's leading to. I just need them to speed it up. Because I'm there. Bring Marlies to me, please. That's it.
May.
Well, I disliked less than I thought I disliked. There's still some things
to still dislike. Over a page long, but all right.
Is it?
Is no. it really?
Yes.
No. Oh, my God. Okay, well, I'll try my best. Obviously, I didn't like Barry telling Iris to go watch the columns, but I feel like I've said my piece about Barry and his infinite moodiness the past few episodes, so I won't touch about that again. On that again.
The enlightenment.
You
like an apology.
Yeah. Bend on
shape.
Oh, right. Yes. I still have a problem with the fact that we are still only hearing about the enlightenment rather than having an explanation. So, like, this was the first major episode that Team Flash went up against DeVoe, and he could have easily given his little evil monologue about to them about what he was doing. I mean, he's a professor, so profess. And, or at least give us hints about what it is in his conversations with Marlies, because it's getting really frustrating. And besides that, I also disliked the montage of Ralph, like just said, because it was unnecessary and prolonged. And I think having Barry just freeze and then hear Ralph's maybe just final words, then have him get up, and that would have done the trick. It took me out of the moment, and, like, the grief itself didn't bother me, per se, but it did bother me what bothered me was Barry saying that Ralph taught him more than he could ever teach Ralph. Like, my son was in pain. I'm sorry. Aww. I laughed because what did Barry teach? What did Ralph teach you, Barry? What? Like, tell me. I really need to know. Did he teach you to think only of yourself before realizing an entire team actually existed? Did he teach you how to be mean to other people? Did his juvenile humor prepare you for future fatherhood? So I don't know, but it really bugged me that Barry had to say that at all. And I just want to add that while, yes, I did like the episode overall, the major sore spot is that it was Ralph who was being warned and that it was all dramatic. Mm-hmm. I think if they'd wanted us to care about him and for his death to have had an impact, they wouldn't have written him to be an asshole. Yep. And I know Cisco explaining Black Canary, like Jess said, to Leo was meant to be funny, but I really did cringe because it was just, it went on for too long. And having her seek vengeance because she loved Oliver and he didn't love her spoke volumes to me. So it was like kind of disrespectful because for whatever reason, Oliver just doesn't want Laurel and Laurel always wants him. And I don't like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just all in bad taste. Finally, while I do think there's so much more intensity now that Neil is back playing DeVoe himself telling Marlies not to think and ignoring her advances completely made me want to punch him in the face. And I can't believe he relied on her before both to help him with his plan and also showed so much affection toward her and now this. So it's like she might as well not be there because he treats her like an unintelligent nuisance. And it's really, really sad and I need her to go.
Yes, the way that DeVoe treats Marlies is infuriating, and I'm looking forward to where it's going, but I am not enjoying the scenes it takes to get there.
Right.
And it's depressing, because like we said, they started off as an evil power couple, like what's Alan's Dark Mirror, and now they're just clearly not that. So yeah, I mean, it's a good character arc for Marlies, but I want to get point faster, and I wish that the drugging thing had not ever been involved. Even though her realization about being drugged was like the only good thing about it. Even that, I would have sacrificed that so that was not happening to her. Anyway, every time I told her not to think, I jumped out of my skin. I agree with Jessica with the Cyrenex stuff because it did feel like the writers of this episode were not fans of Laurel. Like, they were very clearly trying to poke fun of her or something, you know? Making her part of the regime isn't worse than making Kara or Quentin part of it, but giving her the unrequited love for Oliver is just plain petty. Like, that's just...
It never ends.
Yeah. I thought the second Black Canary thing, that whole stuff was, like, Menti poking fun of their own convoluted plots from the Arrowverse, but it still rubbed me the wrong way as well. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I didn't have to say second. Yeah, but whatever. Caitlin used the same needle for everybody. She's not a doctor. This is horrible. Like, I just don't understand if this is, like, a props department problem. Is this a director problem? Like, no one on set gives a fuck about Caitlin, so they don't even think about it problem. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it has to be stopped. Anyway, this is more like the absence of something, but I feel like Cisco doesn't have his own story outside of Cynthia, and Cynthia's never around. So, like, for example, he just got that job offer 2 episodes ago, and he has not mentioned it even once. There's not even a suggestion that he's contemplating it. Mm-hmm. It's like it doesn't exist. So, as much as I like him hyping up Harry, like, I like their moments in this episode, I don't like that that's his story. Mm-hmm. He's not Harry's hype man. I want it to be switched. Reverse the dynamic, please, next season. Cecile hasn't turned up since 413. Again, more absence of things. And Joe, thus, has not done much of anything since 413 either. Okay. And I'm with Jessica upon rewatch. Like, the first time I was like, go, Ralph! But upon rewatch, even though the flashback made me cringe, I was, you know, I was not that upset about the time spent on it, but I do want no more Ralph on my screen outside of that whatever fucking thing is going to happen later on. That's the end. I cannot wait for the first true post-Ralph episode in like 3 days. And I wanted to throw hands when Barry snapped at Iris, and I wish they'd written an explicit apology, but I don't think he's mistreating her canonically, and I think that the final therapy scene showed they're on the same page. However, an I'm sorry from him would have saved us all a great deal of drama. So, should have done it. Damn you, writer's assistant. Okay, what are our predictions for The Flash? The Flash.
Oh, in the radio promo for 420, you hear Dawn saying, Flash, he's going to kill Jitsi. And she sounds like she's talking to him from Star Labs, which means 1, she's on the team, and 2, Iris has met her, and 3, she probably hasn't told him that she's her daughter yet, because otherwise she would just say, Dad! He's gonna kill her!
Yeah.
You know,
So
it'll slip out one day.
That's it. All right, that's a good prediction, and it is accurate because, like you said, it's obviously Dawn. Can't wait to see her. I think Cynthia's gonna come. You know, she's gonna be in the next episode. I think she'll offer to move to Earth One to be with Cisco if he doesn't take the job, which obviously he will not. I also think Marlies will defect to Team Flash by the end of the episode.
Yes.
And I think Iris is gonna be Dawn, and she will get an idea about DeVoe from Dawn. I'm speaking that into existence.
Ooh, you said I that several times. I want it now.
Exactly.
I want it.
See, grow.
Exactly.
If they investigate together, holy shit. We know she's supposed to do journalism in 21.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I'm hoping that Dawn will say something that
for 21?
No. But Iris is going to investigate.
Yes.
So I'm hoping that Dawn says something in 20 that gives Iris the idea to do her investigation in 21. Mm. That's what I'm hoping.
Mm. All right. I like it.
Thank you.
It is spoken. Into existence. Let it live. All right. Because we know Ralph is officially dead per Tom, and we've seen that Hartley film for the finale, I think DeVoe will use Ralph as part of his mindfuck inception thing he's got going on. And since he already used Ralph's voice to rattle Barry in 419, I expect the same for the finale, only more trippy. And Inception Ralph, the one pre-bus, because we see Hartley with his fat whatever that doesn't actually exist.
Because his face is still...
Yeah.
Right.
And he'll be like, really, I became a hero? And Barry will say yes. Then Hero Ralph will show up to tell him it's all good in the end, not to feel bad. And then releasing Barry from his guilt. And the end of the season will be potentially happy and seen. I'm speaking of that in Texas.
I love it.
All right, and now it is time for my Arrow recap.
Joy.
Arrow. In shifting allegiances, Oliver flashes over, to Moscow in order to scoop up a knife from the Bratwurst-Packen so he can let Anatoly know he's welcome back. He's hoping this gesture will inspire Anatoly to help him stop Diaz, but it instead inspires him to tase Oliver and take him directly to Diaz instead. How sweet. Diaz then beats the crap out of Oliver until Anatoly proposes a fair fight. The terms are that the loser leaves Star City. But Diaz cheats and stabs Oliver in the end instead. And it's okay, because Oliver doesn't have to leave. He can stay in jail forever. Meanwhile, Diggle is roping Argus into the defeat Diaz mission, just as Dinah and Curtis are getting Renee back into the swing of things post-hospital. The NTA tries to roll up on Diaz, but they end up trapped in a warehouse firefight and are rescued by Diggle and Argus. Everyone hugs and apologizes, sort of. And they decide to work together on stabbing Diaz. Some quadrant gun supplier named Lydia is doing some gun thing in Star City, so even though Renee chickens out because he loves his daughter too much to die, the other two-thirds of NTA team up with Diggle and Argus to blow up Diaz's gun shipment, and it is awesome. Diggle has to go back to work, though, so they still need Renee to be part of the team. Thankfully, little Zoe shows up and reminds her dad that kids have ears, and she totally knows it's a vigilante, and she wants him to get himself killed in the city. Yay! Diaz wants to buy/sell some property that's technically owned by the city, so he needs Quentin, the new mayor's signature. He coerces Laurel into setting up a meeting, which infuriates Quentin and makes him kick Laurel out of the house. But after she cries to him about how worried she is for him and for herself, he changes his mind, signs the deed, and promises to protect her the way he couldn't protect his own Laurel. Is there something in my eye, or is that just a specter of Quentin's imminent demise? And that's what you missed on Arrow. So, ladies, what did we like about this Arrow episode?
I mean, I have a renewed love for NTA now, you know, because I feel like they're providing what OTA is lacking, which is heart. they've come such a long way, and I love that they were celebrating Renee's homecoming, so that was really nice, and... They're being shown being active in trying to take down Diaz, and I'm glad they're not being left to the side, which says a lot about how the writers feel about them.
Mm-hmm.
And
opposed to
Felicity. Right, which I will get to. Like, they came up with a plan and tried to get the upper hand. It was a good effort, even though they failed. But I was just really also happy to see Diggle being shown doing his own thing at Argus, and the fact that he did help NTA, which is like my dream team. Diggle can join. And then Diggle and Renee got to talk about their feelings and apologizing to a certain degree. And Diggle actually remembered he had a son. so that was great. And I thought I was dreaming while I was watching the episode because Diggle hasn't talked about his kid
mm-hmm.
in so long. So I'm glad that he and Renee bonded, and now Diggle and NTA are okay again, which is a major win. And Quentin and Laurel were at the heart of this episode, and I like that we got to see Laurel express her feelings in regards to Diaz and how she was scared. And I love that Quentin essentially said that he's doing this so that he can protect her because he couldn't protect his OG daughter. And I love how he sympathized because he remembered that he worked with Dark. Like an emotional moment because the two have come so far and the scene really packed an emotional punch. So I think great work by Katie Cassidy and Paul Blackthorne.
Yeah, I agree. I loved the NTA Welcome Home Renee party. I thought that was really sweet and kind of, again, showed how much of a family that they are. And even reuniting with his daughter was really emotional. I'm glad like the show remembers Zoe now because for a while I was certain like they forgot that she existed. But then also Diggle and Renee bonding over how to compartmentalize, you know, because they both had pretty much traumatic experiences within this season that caused them to, like, freeze when in a very, like, intense situation. Mm-hmm. And so it was good for both of them to kind of talk through that and for Diggle to kind of give Renee advice on how to move forward once you, like, survived, like, almost dying. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I like that Zoe's, like, the smartest kid in the room. I loved her, like, giving her father her blessing to be a vigilante. And the reason she gave why she was okay with him going out there and doing it. It's, like, the reverse of Oliver and William. Because William was like, no, you're my daddy.
So he's like, you're everyone's daddy. You belong to this kitty.
He's like, you're everyone's daddy. And William's like, no, you're my daddy. But, it's a nice, like, parallel contrast. Because you're both, like, kids with vigilante fathers and their different perspectives on whether they think that their father should be out there or not. And Zoe seems like a really sweet girl, so I hope we get to see more of her going forward. I like Diggle working with Argus. He really feels like he's found like a groove within Argus and that he was using their resources and filling them in, and that he went to New Tenero and filled them in on what he knows. And so they're like collaborating and all of that. I thought it was really good teamwork. And like Diggle feels like he fits, I think. Like, he's leading his own team, so I think it was good for him. And then for Quentin and Laurel, I loved all their scenes together, and just, like, no matter, at the end of the day, no matter what Laurel decides to do with her life, the one thing that we are sure about, whether she's working for sure with Diaz or she plans on, like, betraying him down the road, it seemed like she is, like, working with him, like, for real, for real. But no matter what she decides to do with her life, the one thing that we do know for sure is that she does love Quentin.
Yes.
As her father, that she never got to have on her earth. Yeah. And so, I'm glad that, you know, it was a little bit painful when he got upset and, like, kicked her out. But I'm glad that he came around to realize that the reason, like, why she's doing things is because she was scared for him. And I don't really love him to that much.
Yeah. It was, like, it was right good. But then it was like,
But I like how he drew the comparison of him working with Damian in the past to protect his Laurel. So I'm glad that he could kind of see, you know, it wasn't him being hypocritical, because he's like, I have been there, actually, so I do know why you are doing the things that you're doing, and I want to return the favor to help you. So I thought that was great.
Aww.
Yeah. Well, I am your father.
Yes, seeing Renee again was such a blessing. I loved the Welcome Home Party, like you said, and him teaming up with Diane Curtis made me so happy. They really feel like a family, and they really bring home that sort of, like, found family element of the show that's been such an important part in previous seasons. I especially love their undercover attempt to get more information on Diaz, and when Curtis made his whole, or Curtis was, like, looking for the little, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, the laser.
Yeah, the laser. Thing. The laser beam. Yeah, so Renee made that big scene, and then he's like, oh, sorry, Haas, it's fine. In order to get the guy to move over. I love that so much. It's also enjoyable to see Diggle getting in on that dynamic, too. And I like that even though he apologized, he also, you know, held them accountable and was like, you know, you guys did not handle it well. So, which I agree. Like, everyone handled poorly. So it's good that everyone, you know, acknowledged.
Taking responsibility.
Yeah, everyone took responsibility. And they parted on good enough terms to work together in the future again. So they're not, like, no one is fighting anymore except for Oliver and everyone. Zoe was adorable. I love her speech to Renee about protecting the city. And I liked that she was listening in and was like, all right, guys, enough of this charade. You know, because, like, obviously they're talking about that shit right in front of her. Of course she knows what's going on.
I liked how she called Curtis and Dinella's, y'all are not as quiet as you think you are.
I mean, right? When you're an adult, you think that kids don't listen to anything.
Like, when adults spell out words, like, don't forget the
D-R-U-G-S. Yes, I can spell. But yeah, speaking, Diggle and Renee sharing their point of view on being dads while also being in the line of fire. I love miracles. I can't believe that happened. I was so glad. Of course, Oliver had to be out of the way for them to be actually able to talk about their own kids, but it was great. Oliver's scenes gave me life. Meanwhile, the Quentin and Laurel scenes, obviously, they were the heart of the episode for me. My heart can't take it. I want to die, because Quentin's going to die, and I know it. But anyway, he loves her so much, and I do, you know, I believe that she really does see him as her father, you know, and she loves him too, and that's the only sort of, like, moral compass she has at the moment, because she really doesn't give a fuck about anything other than keeping him safe at this point. So I love that they're both trying to protect each other, and it brings me much pain, and I love being in pain. So, what did we not like?
I didn't like Oliver going to find Anatoly to get to Diaz, because it was stupid and silly, and he didn't even have his Green Arrow gear, so it's like, what were you going to do, Oliver? Stare Diaz down until he snaps? I also don't understand why Laurel is honestly scared of Diaz. Then I think I mentioned this last podcast, but she's a powerful meta. So even if Diaz burned a guy alive, just because he had a childhood grudge, it still doesn't explain why she's working with him.
Right. Oh, also, I thought she said childhood crush for a second, and I was like, did I miss the part where he tried to ask this guy out and got rejected? But no, it was grudge.
That would have been interesting. Sorry, I mean, she's basically a powerful meta, so she can be queen of Star City, and I don't understand why the writers won't let her be great. The Diaz and Oliver parts were the most boring parts of the episode for me. And even after Diaz's backstory last week, there's still no intensity or weight to what he's doing. So it's just there. It exists. And that's it. The conversations between Anatoly and Oliver were more interesting. And it still makes me bitter that he was not the big bad of the season. Finally, I did notice that Felicity was absent the entire episode. Like, I know Oliver is a lone wolf now, but he can't be seen calling his wife, telling her, you know, hey, I'm checking in, please don't worry, blah,
in
blah,
Russia
blah.
Right now, BRB.
Right. So, like, I thought it was really strange that she only appeared in the final 5-10 seconds of the episode and didn't have any speaking lines at all. And I also dislike the fact that the show makes it seem like Felicity only wanted to work on her and Curtis's company after being fired from Team Arrow. So they definitely could have used this episode to showcase her working from home or calling Curtis so they can discuss company stuff. And now I'm starting to wonder if they'll ever actually do anything with the company besides just tell us it exists and it's not being worked on. So I don't know. I don't know what's going.
I don't know. I don't feel like, part of me doesn't feel like she had a place in the episode. Like, if they squeezed her in, like, she'd just be like on an outlier. Because Diggle and New Team Arrow did all of the legwork that she could have done anyway, so it would have been redundant. Like, they got in to the warehouse or whatever based off of Renee's tip, and then Diggle had the info from Argus on Lydia, so there's not really...
But to be fair, redundancies have never stopped them. Like, when Elena showed up randomly and they're just doing the same
thing. But what's interesting to me, I guess, is because she is... Oliver's wife, right?
Right.
So even if she wasn't on Team Arrow, she could still be seen helping, like, hey, Diggle needs some information, he'll call
Or even, like, you know? With Quentin or, I don't know, it feels kind of like the writers, to me, it felt like if they didn't have to pay her for this episode, because that was in her contract, she gets paid for every episode, that she's in every episode, she just wouldn't have been in an episode.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that one little 10 seconds at the end, I don't even think it was, like, 10 seconds.
It was, like, really, five.
Like, 5 seconds, where they showed, I think that was important, because... If Oliver's going to jail, then his family needs... We need, like, a reaction shot from his family. But it just also kind of, like, made it very obvious that she didn't matter the rest of the episode. And, it's kind of like...
Only because I think about when Barry was in jail. It's not like Iris didn't...
Disappeared.
Right.
Yeah.
Because she had something to do. Felicity has nothing to do. It kind of feels like the writer's, like, if Oliver and Felicity are not working together, then they just don't care about Felicity. Mm. It's kind of what it feels like. She might have more stuff to do next episode, but, I mean, it's going to be about Oliver, so then she gets to be in the episode. Other than that, like, And this isn't a dislike, I just thought it was kind of funny at the end when new Team Arrow was like, we're down at Man, do you want to like leave Horus and join us? Like, why the fuck would he leave like a paid job where he probably has benefits and he gets to lead his own team to be like an unpaid volunteer on new Team Arrow? Like, that, of course he's not going to join y'all. So I just thought that was funny. It doesn't make any sense. Oliver and Anatoly scenes were kind of boring to me. I don't know why Oliver was so far removed from the main plot for most of the episode. I mean, it kind of came together at the end, but it's just weird that the title character of the show has the C-plot of the episode. Mm-hmm. And it even wasn't that much of an exciting plot until you got to the end. So it was kind of, it just felt a little bit off to me.
Yeah.
And then, like, Diaz, of course, he was gross before, but I really don't like him pushing up on Laurel in front of her father. Like, all of that, like, touchy-feely.
Yeah, like, the whole, like, gross. Yeah, and it's just, like, the whole, like, macho, like, look control I have over your daughter.
Right,
yeah,
and it, like, I agree. Like, I don't know why the fuck she's so scared. Like, you are a meta. You have superpowers. Right.
Like, she could just throw her siren, you know,
she, like, she can scream in his ear and be done with it. Like, she's done it before. Yeah. Just scream in his ear, explode his brain, and go about your business. Like, I don't understand why she is as scared as she is. It's kind of like bringing her down a little bit, because she was like a badass in Earth too, I assume. And then she's just scared all the time.
And
then
we saw what
Siren
X could do too.
She's scared of Diaz.
Yeah, she's scared of people she could kill.
Yeah.
So easily.
It doesn't really make sense. And I, like, Diaz threatening to kill Quentin all the time, it's just like annoying. You know?
Yeah.
Like, at this point, I don't know. I totally agree with that. Like, I don't know why the fuck she wouldn't just scream in his ear and kill him, you know? If he, the moment that he threatens Quentin, it's just dumb. Like, clearly, she no longer agrees with him. I don't know why the fuck she even agreed with him in the first place, right? Like, there's no explanation for it.
She went with him because she thought she's scared, so she went with him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really
it's like, why
sense.
Are you afraid?
Like,
why are you scared?
It would make more sense if he had found some way to repress her powers, and then, then he could
control
her.
Exactly. Right. I wouldn't want that either.
Right.
But if he was doing that, this would make sense. Now, there's no reason why.
And if she was, like, okay with it up until the point that he started threatening Quentin, that's when she could have, like, bucked the fuck up and be like, you stay away from him or I will scream in your ear and you will die.
Yeah. And she did say something like that previously, but now it's like,
I'm too scared.
And she's too scared. Exactly. It doesn't make sense. It makes it's not at least bit believable. Especially because clearly Black Siren is someone who's willing to go to whatever extreme she needs to get what she wants. So now she wants to protect Quentin. Why don't you just kill fucking Diaz?
Yeah.
Anyway. Oliver trying to get Anthony's help and finding himself trapped with Diaz was just dumb. He's dumb for doing it alone. It makes no sense. Why did you listen to your stupid hallucination and decide to go at it alone? How is that going to help anybody? You're an idiot. And now he's sending himself to jail, and I don't even know why. Like, couldn't he have just left Star City and then helped Star City run outside Star City? Like, why was it go to jail?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Because Diaz wanted him to go to jail. He didn't have a choice in that, really.
Yeah, I guess so. But just, like, escape. I don't know. Not go there in the first place. Is the, like, just don't end yourself in jail. It's just dumb. Anyway, as much as I loved the Laurel Quentin dynamic, as I said, I don't like that Quentin is definitely gonna fucking die. Because, like, the only option, I mean, there's a third option of everything works out and they're happy, but that's just not gonna happen. So.
He retires.
Either Laurel dies or Quentin dies. And obviously, Laurel's not gonna die. So.
She's been there, done that.
Exactly. Right. Been there, done that, and they're not gonna, like, I mean, I guess it could, because Arrow clearly is dead.
I mean, Sarah's died multiple times. But.
Yes, but I mean, like, the whole arc is I'm not gonna let what happened to Laurel happen again. Mm-hmm. So if it just happened again, that would be.
If there are Lazarus pits, okay, that's a prediction. If Quentin dies.
Lazarus pit, yes! Anyway, I assumed that Emily must have been filming something that week or whatever. She couldn't be there, and that's why I didn't have her there, because it was super weird to have her just be silent in that one scene near the end. But if, like, going off that assumption, if it was true that she couldn't be there, it makes no sense that Oliver wouldn't even be checking in with her or leaving a message. Or, like, obviously, I'm sure William wasn't filming something, so he could have fucking called, and William could have picked up, and he could have been like, where's Felicity? And then William would be like, she's never working at her company. And then,
having
like,
lunch with Elena.
Exactly, right? And then he's like, oh, okay, well, tell him, you know, I just wanted to let you guys know that I'll be gone for like a week or whatever, but don't worry, I love you both or whatever. Whatever. Something that shows that he's still, you know, the whole theme for him is family this year. But now, suddenly, for the last two episodes, ever since his hallucination, he's decided that family is stupid and he's just gonna do everything alone. So, I hate it.
And what's interesting about that to me is that he wants to do this alone, fine. but Felicity's still his wife and he has a son. Mm-hmm. You're not going to call them up to say, hey, I have a dumb plan that probably end up me being going to jail.
Yeah.
So, like,
or dead.
Just wanted to let you know.
Like, the best case scenario, I end up in jail.
Right, like, I can see, like, he won't talk to her because she's obviously going to try to talk him out of it, but you have a family, dude. Like, this is just stupid.
It is like the previous episode, or 2 episodes ago, when he was like, oh, yeah, if something happens, you'll take care of William. And I'm like, well, is that what you think William wants? Like, right. I have Felicity now. I don't need you, my dad. This is bullshit. I don't like it. I think it's really weird.
It just doesn't make them seem like a team themselves.
Right.
Like, as husband and wife.
Yeah. But even
if he wasn't talking to her, like, she could have been stalking him.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Because like, she would do that. She doesn't need to be in the...
Doesn't she have him jipped?
Yeah. Yes, and she doesn't need to be in the cave to...
But you know, she has the tracker on him.
And she doesn't need to be in the cave to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know.
It's not like he locked her out of the cave. She can fucking go to the cave.
Right.
She can hack the cave.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
So, but even beyond Felicity, the whole team, it's not believable to me that after all this time, they wouldn't be worried about the way Oliver's behaving and actually try to, like, be a team with him when he doesn't want to be team. Like, you're not like, oh, well, Oliver's being shit right now, so I guess I'm done with that. Like, he's gonna get himself killed.
Right.
Come on. I'm sure that now that he's, you know, on trial and in jail, they'll come together.
Dingle will be so guilty.
Yeah, but it's just, I just think it's true that it had to get to this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, speaking of the future, and the point that we're at now, what can we predict that's coming up for Arrow?
I know you predict that Quinn is gonna die. Yep. I totally back that prediction, because especially this episode, it was like, oh my god, this is a signal, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also fear that Renee could die too. Or retire, because he kept talking about...
No, because I don't think he'll retire. So right. He's gotta die.
It has to be death. Yes. Which is sad, because he was in the hospital. He was in the hospital for a month. He does not need to die.
Exactly.
I don't think he'll die, though.
But, I hope not.
But if he were to, like, I felt like...
I feel like Zoe's blessing was him blessing him that he's not going to die. Like, if she was, like, scared...
That's true. That would be shit if she was like, go die! And then you so die! Guilty. Exactly.
Okay, I accept
this. Yeah, so she's not gonna die.
Yeah.
But here's what I will say. I was thinking, up to this point, I was like, the NTA storyline has been so, like, has been played so poorly, people have been reacted really poorly to it, like, maybe they'll just get rid of them next season, or they'll bring them down, but this episode with bringing him back in, getting the blessing, mm-hmm. having bring the team back together, having Diggle join them,
clearly,
I feel like it's definitely
going to be, like,
exactly.
Yeah. Like, Oliver's going to have to go to them, because they're not going to, you know. Yeah. It's not going to be them falling before Oliver.
Which
Oliver
is,
has to go back to them.
Not that I want them to fall before his feet or anything, but it is, like, the amount... Or the total lack of apology from them definitely feels like the writer is standing their ground.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, this
because
is what
we're
going to do.
It's totally not believable that they wouldn't at this point be like, hey, sorry, that things are not this okay. Instead, they're like, all apologies will come from y'all.
Yeah.
So.
Which is interesting because, mm-hmm. like, I mean, we talked about this in regard to Ralph kind of taking over Flash or whatever, mm-hmm. but they're... Now, obviously, with the last episode of Flash, there seems to be a path for Barry toward the end of the season. Versus with Oliver, NTA is so... The writers, like, really like them, and they're actually progressing as characters.
And the fandom aside, they're actually...
Fandom aside.
They're actually, yeah.
They're actually,
they're
like,
well. More well, I don't know if this...
Well, yeah, I was going to say NTA
like
is Arrow's Ralph.
Than, right.
But
they don't circle back to the same stories. Like, they actually
progress. But it's Arrow's Ralph that's going somewhere.
Yes.
Right. So...
Exactly.
So I'm sorry, Arrow fans, that you have your own Ralph. But since I don't mind
at
your
Ralph.
At least
your Ralph is like going somewhere.
Yeah.
And I like your Ralph. They're three characters that actually make sense. Anyway.
Alright, so are we ready to nominate ladies
of Gumption? It's kind of hard because it's so weak for the ladies on both shows. But I guess like the only one if I could kind of give, because I can't give it to, I could give it to Zoe, but I'm not going to give it to Zoe. Like, I think Caitlin in The Flash, she had, like, a good kind of progression where she's trying to figure out who she is without Killer Frost. Mm-hmm. And she did go with the meta team. She got kidnapped, but she did get the gun to help Leo cool down.
Yeah.
So she did, like, jump into action there.
She
and then she did
active.
Find, and then she did, you know, find a... isolated her little cryogenic genes. She was very proactive in trying to figure out what her next steps were.
Yeah, I like that she didn't rely on someone else to find it for her.
Right.
Like she was doing
she
that
did,
research.
She did,
I felt like
I mean,
the
she
first
relied
time.
On the emotional support of Iris.
Right.
But she didn't actually have anyone.
Yes. And like, if for the first time, maybe ever, since her whole Killer Frost thing was introduced, it actually felt like she was
in control of it. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes. Like, she's choosing to try to find her again. Yes. And I also think that, yeah, like, I know a lot of people are like, okay, well, how come she spent, like, a year trying to get rid of it, and now suddenly she wants it back? But I think it makes sense, because they had them sort of bond, and mm-hmm. so now she's like, it takes losing something to realize what you had, right?
Yeah.
So.
And it helps, like, that Killer Frost isn't necessarily... evil.
Yeah, yeah. It's not evil.
If, like, if the first time that you learn about your powers is that you're evil,
yeah.
then you're obviously not going to want
yeah. And then once evil. The power of Iris's love transformed Killer Frost in episode 5 of season 4,
now she's Frost, a, let's go.
Now she's a cool person, so now you want her back.
I see what you did there.
You she's want her a cool in the person. Yes, thank you, thank you. Now you want her post-it notes back, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, I feel she like wants the jacket back. Let's
she wants the jacket, there you go. No, but the jacket doesn't disappear with her, okay? She's still got the jacket.
But she doesn't wear it.
Exactly, she doesn't look good in it. She's got to have the
white hair.
Exactly.
The aesthetic.
So yeah, so Caitlin for side B, and side A we ended up with...
Huh? Lena for side
Lena.
A.
Okay, Lena for side A.
Lena or Carr if you want a little wild card in there, but Lena.
Yeah.
Do that in there, Mike?
Twisting the knife. I mean, I would say Kara over Caitlin, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like Kara, there was a larger story there for Kara, mm-hmm. and it's been brewing on right. screen for much longer.
Yes.
But yeah, I think Lena probably would
Lena's be like the strongest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was easy.
Much better than last week. See, we progressed.
We progressed, or the show's regressed. Last week was hard because there was so much strength.
Too much gumption. Yeah, there's not enough gumption.
It's like diet gumption.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Remember that you can contact us at DCTVGumption on Twitter. If you want to give us your feedback or just interact with us when we're watching the shows, because we always love that. We love interactions. You can also email us your longer feelings at ladieswgumption@gmail.com or on the Podomatic or iTunes websites where you can leave reviews. And contact us on our individual Tumblrs, Valerie and Fetis, Tatiana, Falling in Love in a Flash, Jessica, and her own hero writer, May. And we'll see you again next week with Supergirl, Flash, Krypton, and Arrow. Those
the are same.
The, shows. The same four shows.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.